Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Now the sneezing fit starts. Sorry, there may be a couple of interruptions. Hey, this is the horn. It's a little, it's about 2 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. It's Moran Monday on the horn, and I'm going to dispense with most of the shilly-shallying because I still have Dr. Bill connected on the other line. We had some echoing going on. I hope that resolves itself and goes away because given what Dr. Bill was talking about, in the past 2 hours, well, I've got information here that I wanted to share with him and with you that I think puts a perfect exclamation point on everything Dr. Bill did in the last 2 hours, and in fact, much of the thesis of many of the things he's been saying since March. So I do have Dr. Bill on the line. Let me kill the intro music because that just makes things even more confusing, especially for me as I sit here and press buttons and. Well, you know, all of that. Let's see. Checking. Recording. Good. Dr. Bill. Good. First thing to put out there is a bit of an announcement. One, I apologize for being absent on Friday. It was unavoidable. Two, there will be an I will be absent again on Friday the 18th of October. This has nothing to do with activism. It has to do with the fact that my youngest daughter, our baby, is a princess in the homecoming court of her high school. And, well, you know, mommies and daddies have to be there for that kind of thing. And I'm proud of her. We're proud of her. So that. But this is what I wanted to make sure that you got to hear. Dr. John got in touch with me and alerted me to the fact that the nominations for the 9th Annual People's Choice Podcast Awards are, in fact, underway. And Dr. John writes, the People's Choice Podcast Awards recognize excellence in podcasting through a grassroots nomination and voting process culminating in awards presented at the annual New Media Expo in Las Vegas. And, you know, after nearly 10 years of this, I guess we're still new media, but we're old new media, I suppose. But Dr. Bill notes, this is an excellent chance to spread the word about the groundbreaking work being done at the Horn and bring new listeners to Bob Kincaid and Dr. Bill O'Brien. Here's how you can help. Nominate the program. podcastawards.com is the address. Then you enter the program information, and all of this in the podcast name, for instance, Head On with Bob Kincaid, in the podcast field, the name for Dr. Bill's program, which is the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility with Dr. Bill O'Brien. Then you enter the podcast URL, and these will both be in the text, which will be posted at headonradionetwork.com. I think Agnes is working on that as we speak. You can nominate each program only once, so it's not one of those things where you set up a line of bots to go and, well, I guess they're trying to keep it sort of really grassrootsy and honest. And then you follow up with the nomination by spreading the word about it, and you use the hashtag PCA, Paul Charlie Alpha 13, to encourage your friends to nominate the Horn as well. And then when the vote, if we succeed in getting through the nomination process, then you vote. So all this information will be up at headonradionetwork.com so that you can get busy and do the nominating. I'm really not a very good shameless self-promoter, but in this case, I really appreciate Dr. John bringing this to our attention, your attention, my attention, Dr. Bill's attention, because I think it would be a great way to add folks to the conversation, and that is what this is all about all along. Let me now bring Dr. Bill in. Are you still there, Dr. Bill?
Sure am, Bob.
All right. And the echoing seems to have gone away, and that's a real bonus. Can you hear okay?
Fine. Great.
Okay, wonderful. I sat here, as I do often during your program, Dr. Bill, just in slack-jawed wonder, listening to what you are bringing to the conversation, because there's so much. I'm reminded more than anything else by listening to you of what I don't know. And the last 2 hours is a perfect example of that, and I dare say there's not a lot of people out there that know what you were talking about vis-a-vis the Articles of Confederation and everything leading up to the Constitution and the arguments that lay within the Constitution within the ratification process. And for that, I thank you. But as I've told people repeatedly, the beauty of the work that you do is that you, in very calm and reasoned manner, will lay out a case, and then about the last 5 minutes of the program, you bring out an axe handle and hit people across the forehead with it. And I love it. And I even get emails now, Dr. Bill, saying, I think he's got the axe handle out. And so people are getting used to that, and it's really wonderful. But I wanted to share with you, based on what you had talked about, I wanted to share with you a story that we covered a couple of weeks ago, but that is beginning to get some legs, as it were, since we're getting close to the date of when this thing is apparently going to happen. Are you familiar with the Tea Party trucker event that's planned for October 11th?
No, I'm not, Bob. Not specifically. Although I'm kind of guessing by the title as to what I think I may know what it might be.
Well, they're going to drive to Washington D.C. Their initial announced plan was they were going to drive into Washington D.C. and just gum up traffic. But I suspect that since a motorist got blown away last week by the Capitol Police, they've rethought that, Tea Party patriots not being that willing to take bullets. So now their plan is to encircle the Beltway and stop all traffic on I-495 around Washington, D.C. until they can get their way.
Uh-huh.
Care to guess what their way is?
Defund Obamacare?
No, they're past that now.
Okay.
No, they want all of the legislators, members of Congress, up to and including, I suppose, the President of the United States, who they deem not to be following their oath of office, to be arrested for the same.
Oh, okay.
Does this, Dr. Bill, make you cringe?
Bob, it does, because I didn't know this. I didn't know about this particular piece. Can I take a moment?
Oh, sure.
Okay. I've been doing this in class the last couple of days, and I kind of apologize to the class, because most of the students in the class are not familiar with this. It appears in none of the textbooks. In 1782, at the end of the American Revolution, well after the defeat of Cornwallis at Yorktown, while the Continental Army was awaiting arrival of the peace treaty ending the American Revolution, the Army was in Newburgh, New York, which is about 60 miles or so north of New York City, right near where West Point is now. And the Continental Army was waiting for word that the peace treaty had signed so that they could muster out and go home. But a rumor began to circulate, beginning within the officer corps, but then throughout the entire army, that when they were sent home, they were going to be sent home without any money, because the Congress didn't have the power to pay them. And so immediately, rumors of a possible mutiny began to circulate throughout the military and throughout the officer corps of the military. And the strategy was that the Army would refuse to put down its weapons and instead would march on Philadelphia, take Congress by prisoner, and take Congress prisoner, and force Congress to pass legislation increasing their powers vis-a-vis the states, and also give themselves, via legislation, the power to raise money so that they could pay the troops. It's exactly the same thing.
It sounds like it.
It's referred to in the books, but only people that have done research in this period even know about it, because it never makes the textbook. The editors edit it out all the time. It's called the Newburgh Conspiracy. And if it is mentioned at all in the books, it's because when President Washington gets wind of this, because he's commander then, at the time, the commander of the Continental Army, when he gets word of this, he goes and calls the officers together and makes this absolutely phenomenal speech in which he persuades them to stifle, to put this down, and to basically find a way to bring this potential march to a conclusion, and not do it. And so what has happened is the officers have been promised half pay for life for their service in the war for independence. And Congress can't fulfill this. What Washington is able to persuade them to take as an alternative is full pay for 5 years. And they are willing to accept this in lieu of half pay for the rest of their lives. What happens after this, when the mutiny finally ends, Congress sends out the word to the states that they need to, because Congress doesn't have the power to tax under the Articles of Confederation. Congress sends the word out to the state legislatures that they now have a commitment to raise $311 million in order to meet the military obligations that they have made to the officer corps. And so therefore the state legislatures must pass tax legislation and tax their citizens in order to raise the money to make good on these promises to the military. And state after state bucks against this, and there's this tremendous outgrowth of opposition to the military, especially at the same time when the officers get together and decide that they want to create this fraternal organization called the Society of the Cincinnati, which is a throwback to the ancients, which is a permanent officer corps. And now the people of the country, the taxpayers of this country, are being asked to pay taxes in order to provide the commanders of the Continental Army full pay for 5 years, which is going to total $311 million. And there's this tremendous backlash in state after state after state, which forms the backdrop to the calling of the Constitutional Convention. When this opposition emerges in state after state, the nationalists then begin to beat the drums that this is a perfect indication as to why we have to do something about the power of the central government. And it's seen as one of the major reasons why people begin to support the calling of, ultimately, of what becomes the Constitutional Convention. This is unbelievable. So what we're in was a situation right now where we're talking about taking Congress prisoner again and doing the same thing with the idea of another Constitutional Convention looming in the background. My God, this is amazing.
And what they're angry about is not that far from issues of pay. These are Tea Party people. So I know it sounds elitist, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Yeah.
These are Tea Party people, so that means that they are low functioning intellectually.
Yeah. Right.
They are certainly poorly informed at best, if ill-informed or at worst. And so they are aggrieved by, and you won't be surprised by this, Dr. Bill, they are aggrieved by the Environmental Protection Agency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're aggrieved by Obamacare. They're aggrieved by state and local laws about idling their trucks. And they're aggrieved about required technological updates for their trucks. You know, these massive, humongous vehicles that can deal death in an instant. You know, they should probably just, you know, if they're rattling along on, you know, oh, what, 9 wheels instead of 18. So be it. Free market, right?
Yep.
They're all worked up about that, and they say if police try to stop them as they, you and I are old Latin scholars. Let's haul out some of our Latin, Dr. Bill, as they try to, in Caesarean fashion, circumvallate the city, Washington City, as the framers would have called it, Washington City.
The 10 square miles of Washington City.
Yeah, they're going to circumvallate Washington, D.C., and they're not going to allow any traffic to come through at all. And if the police try to stop them, they say they're just going to park their trucks right on the highway.
Yeah. Yeah.
And originally, they started out, it was going to be an impeachment call, but now they've backed off, and they just want Nancy Pelosi arrested. They want Senator Dianne Feinstein arrested, which I find laughable because Senator Feinstein is about the furthest from a liberal you will ever find in the Senate of the United States. I mean, I think there are Republicans more liberal than her.
Yeah.
And they say that Pelosi and Feinstein have armed al-Qaeda Syrian rebels. There's a possibility that some Canadian truckers might get involved. I mean, this is nasty. And then, now, like I said, Earl Conlon is the guy who's running this thing. And just sometimes it's worthwhile to peek behind the press releases and get an idea of who a guy like Earl Conlon is. And while it is rather coarse, I think it is worth sharing. Let's see. At one point he has said, and this is on his page, Tea Party Command Center. Okay?
Yes.
Even if the movement is a flop, it still, capital H, has already lit the flame of all caps, freedom and liberty, ... all caps, we win, ... close quote. Lovely.
Oh, my.
So, and then there's this. This was posted yesterday. I've always believed Obama to be the Antichrist from the day I first laid eyes on him. Not to mention the dreams I have had for the past 15 years showing me a man in office who I've never heard of before. Then comes 2008 and the on and on. I mean, we're like I said, low functioning.
Yeah.
And then finally this. Think, all caps again, think of it like this. If Obastard declares martial law, and that's M-A-R-S-H-A-L, we will then, capital K, know, all caps, who and where they are. And this is the part where you kind of have to sit back and say, oh, I think we may have a problem here. Then we will have a clear knowledge of who supports them, and all caps, who to shoot.
Oh, God. Oh, Bob, this is amazing. This is more than amazing. It's, oh.
They're not kidding, Dr. Bill.
No, they're not. And what what's happening is that they are unleashing forces that they can't control. There's no way that they can control these people. Once you give these people free rein and you encourage them and to believe that what they're doing is right and in fact is patriotic, then you've lost control. They are in control.
Well, didn't Robespierre have a marvelous time watching people march to Dr. Guillotine's new humane execution device?
Yeah. Yes.
Until he got to take his own stroll to it,
and the founding fathers faced the same thing. I mean, what they, you know, John Jay made the comment. I use this many times. John Jay made the comment at the time of the revolution and said, "I feel like I'm being pushed into being a radical. I don't want to be a radical, but the only way that I can continue to influence the movement that we started is to stay here." And find a way to work this out, because if I leave, who's going to keep it under control? mean, John Jay said that. And so basically, once you start this, and once you bring a certain level of people into the streets, so to speak, then you lose control over what they do.
Yeah, there are abundant ready analogies for genies in bottles, and Pandora walking around in the night with a box, and I mean, this is that.
This is frightening.
It is, and I don't, you know, I don't bring this kind of information forward as you know, entertainment or even as a means to inflame or frighten people. But we have to understand the gravity of this. You and I, of course, always before the program, and a little announcement, of course, there will be no program. No, Dr. Bill will not be live tomorrow. But you and I have a little conversation before we get started with your program every afternoon. Right. And one of the things we were talking about today, and I don't think it can be said plainly enough, therefore let's talk about it again. This isn't an argument about Obamacare. This isn't an argument about the debt or the deficit or whatever shibboleth they may bring up to hang around their action. The fact that you were talking today about the idea that a constitutional convention is not that far afield says that what they are involved in, and correct me if I'm wrong, is revolutionary in nature.
It's revolution. And for generations, Americans have been afraid of a constitutional convention, because once you get everybody together and you put the Constitution on the table, how do you control what's done to it? And so a convention called for one or two particular things can get out of control. I mean, the Constitutional Convention itself in 1787, no sooner did the delegates open the convention, then they basically said, we all came here to revise the Articles of Confederation, Governor Randolph of Virginia said, but let's face it, we all know that the Articles of Confederation is beyond revising. What we've got to do is scrap the thing. And then basically they hand out copies of what is the Virginia plan, which is Madison's plan, which becomes the Constitution. So once they get in the room, they suspend the rules and they begin the process, which becomes revolutionary. And that's what will happen the next time if we ever do have a Constitution convention. And now we're 8 states away. If we get 8 more Republican-controlled states who are willing to buy into this, then they can call a Constitution convention and put the whole document, Bill of Rights and everything else, on the table and up for discussion.
And let's talk about what we mean by everything else up for discussion. A woman's right to choose. Access to birth control, access to the ballot, the ability of an 18-year-old to vote. Everything that is settled in this country can be unsettled in a trice, can it not?
Exactly. It's open season again, and you're starting from scratch all over again. And what you can do is basically, you know, it'd be different if it was called to focus on one amendment of the Bill of Rights or something, but if you call a constitutional convention without, you know, without a very, very specific agenda, then all of this anti-government feeling that is being generated, you know, on Fox News and all these other places is going to come to a head. And these people that are around Washington, you know, in trucks, what's happening is that the people who really want a constitutional convention are using whatever appeals to the truckers. They're not going to buy into the need for a constitutional convention, but they will buy into the EPA and what it's doing to my truck, and the fact that they're requiring me to make technological changes in my truck, which I don't have the money for, and all the rest of it. In other words, what they're doing is bringing this down to issues that these people can tie into that have nothing to do with the real agenda. And they become minions. They become puppets of somebody else who's pulling the string, and they don't even know what the end game is.
And to be quite blunt, they will be the first to be screwed in the process, will they not?
They always are, yeah, because the little guy always is.
And just the idea, and I've talked about this from time to time in the past, but I think we really need to drive it home now. A constitutional convention would be called under the Constitution as it presently exists. Only after they gavel it to order can they suspend the rules, right?
Yeah.
So In other words, the Constitutional Convention would be called within a legal framework in which, for instance, Citizens United is the rule of the land. So, it, you know, there can be banners hung around the arena that say, "This Constitutional Convention brought to you by Koch Industries."
Bob, the campaign to elect delegates, to choose delegates that goes to go to this convention, and now we've seen with the gerrymandering process that's happened on the state level in congressional districts, I mean, the ability of the Republican control of the House is in large part the product of gerrymandering. And what you have are these people with no political background, no political experience, that are being brought out of nowhere to... And they're puppets. They're totally under the control of the people who put up the money to get them elected. And they come from purely, from totally safe districts, which means there's nobody in opposition to them that they have to be accountable to. And so what they become is a cadre within the House of Representatives that's calling the shots, and Boehner's helpless against these people because there are 80 of them. I mean, there's enough of them to literally control what the Republican Party is able to do as the majority party in the House. I mean, it's amazing.
By the way, you may be interested in knowing who is helping to sort of push this along. You will not be surprised, Dr. Bill, when I say Glenn Beck.
Oh, okay. No, I'm not surprised.
So would you kind of expect, yep, if this is going on and Glenn Beck is involved, would you expect to maybe see, David Barton?
Yes. Yeah.
And he's not going to stand there and tell him about the Newburgh Rebellion, is he?
No. No, we're going to talk about the founders as the 5,000-year leap to find the 28 principles. That's going to be the agenda of the Constitutional Convention, if it's ever called. And Glenn Beck talks all the time about the Constitution and about the founding. I mean, he's one of the people that would really see tremendous opportunity to be gained in a Constitutional Convention. I mean, ideologically, this is right up his alley. He's already got the principles, the 28 principles, that we need to use as a measuring stick as to what we do and don't do and what we keep and what we get rid of.
And see, these people who know absolutely nothing about the Constitution and even less about the law, one of the words that they throw around quite easily, for instance, it is this cause, we the truckers and patriots must go to D.C. and put a stop to their plans and not give up until the treasonous people are arrested.
Yeah.
So they have predetermined that anybody who is not following a teabagger agenda is de facto guilty of treason.
Is guilty of treason, yes.
It's not far from there to a trip to the wall, is it?
No, it's not far from there to Animal Farm.
Yeah.
And the pigs are about to take control. My heavens.
And then they get to learn that some pigs are more equal than other pigs.
Other pigs, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, no, this is a mess. I mean, you kind of opened another door for me. I wish I could at least hear the axe handle whistling when you bring it out.
But I didn't realize I was doing that.
Oh, it's magnificent. It really is. But when you said everything, you know, everything is on the table, my God, after they gaveled the thing to order and they suspend the rules, well, doesn't 237 years of Supreme Court and federal jurisprudence go with that? I mean, at that point, there are no rules.
No,
it's anarchy.
No, that's right, and it's controlled because chances are that there's going to be a prearranged majority of delegates there, and of course what makes the history of the Constitutional Convention interesting is to watch the Madisons and the Jays and the Hamiltons try to build a coalition in the 18th century. But with technology now, you can pull it off in no time. In other words, we're watching revolutions in the Middle East happen on the street with cell phones, and this is going to be the equivalent of that.
Well, we have a question coming in from Ron and Raleigh, Dr. Bill.
Okay.
He says, if a constitutional convention happens, would there be any guarantee that the people that serve in this convention be people cognizant of what is actually in the Constitution?
No. And the question, the next question would be how the representatives of the states are going to be chosen. Would they be chosen by the state legislature? Would they be chosen? Chances are, in order to make them legitimate, they would have to be chosen in elections, you know, as the delegates to the Constitutional Convention, you know, for the ratification convention were. In other words, the ratification would have to, at least in theory, be by the people, which means there would have to be some sort of popular ratification of the product of this.
Well, all that voter suppression sure would come in handy about then, wouldn't it?
Exactly. I mean, that's why I say everything that's been going on for the last 18 months or whatever would all come to a head. And the point is that given the amount of money, and we're talking, you know, I mean, this article pointed hundreds of millions of dollars that are that's going into this effort. These people aren't throwing money away. I mean, they have a pretty good idea as to what they're after if they're putting that kind of money on the table. And so this is pretty important, I think. And I can't imagine, I'll be honest with you, why Ed Schultz and Chris Matthews and some of these other people haven't tied into a little bit of this and see, you know, that all this attention that everybody's focusing on Ted Cruz, and I mean, this is not it at all.
No, it's not. And I don't know if it's because, personally, I think there's like some sort of brain disease that affects you after you're inside Washington, D.C. media long enough, and all you can see are the political machinations back and forth. You cannot see through to the end game. And it sounds like to you, and certainly to me, and maybe a few others, certainly within the Horn family, there's a very apparent end game.
Unfortunately, there seems to be one, and nobody is talking about it. And everybody's interested in the horse race, in how this shutdown is going to come to an end, and what's going to happen. Obama, bank, all wrong that are on that, you know, and unfortunately, we have the Tin Man and the Scarecrow standing out in front of this booming voice, and these people are calling the shots, and we don't even know what's going on. As a population, it's frightening. This is frightening, Bob.
And I will say that I have never known you, Dr. Bill, to be an alarmist. You are as much a voice of reason as exists in my life.
Well, I've always found this kind of conversation and discussion interesting, but usually it's academic. I mean, usually it doesn't have consequences.
Yeah, there's a little sherry involved, maybe some brie.
Oh, in this case, what I'm beginning to see is scaring me quite a bit, to be honest with you, because I don't see anybody talking about it, and I don't see anybody needing. In fact, most people are going to say, if you think about it, most people are going to say, gee, the constitutional, there's so much discord. The government is dysfunctional. There's no conversation going on. People can't agree on anything. Congress can't. Maybe it's time for everybody to sit down around the same table and have a discussion. A constitutional convention would be a good idea. It would give people an opportunity to air their differences and bring people together and get them to finally talk and all of this. And so, how do you argue against this?
Well, that's the same tactic that's being used in the current shutdown, looming debt crisis charade that, you know, the Republicans started out with, well, if they won't defund Obamacare, we'll shut down the government. And now they have proceeded to, well, all we want to do is sit and talk.
Yeah.
Rand Paul got caught on a hot mic talking to Mitch McConnell saying, you know, I think we can win if we just keep saying all we want to do is talk.
All we want to do is talk, because that's what people, you can't argue against that. Because what they try to pin on, when the president says, I want a clean resolution, but I'm not going to do it at the point of a gun. And so what comes out of that is the president is saying that he will not talk, he will not negotiate. He's demanding 100% or he won't even come to the table. And so, you know, in a sense, what they're doing is using all of our ideological priorities against us in this thing, and so ultimately, in order to argue against it, you find yourself arguing against principles that you agree with, like conversation and negotiation and compromise and all the rest of it.
But they seem to have forgotten back when Ronald Reagan, even though it was a lie when he said it, said famously, "Well, we don't negotiate with terrorists."
Yeah, and that's exactly what President Obama is being asked to do.
And frankly, I'm not all that comfortable. I'm halfway. One of the reasons I don't want that conversation to take place, Dr. Bill, is because I'm scared of what he'll give away.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's out there. They're out there. He sent the Secretary of the Treasury to the Sunday shows to say that we really do want to have a conversation about entitlement reform.
Right.
Well, when I hear entitlement reform, that tells me at the tender age of 50 that I've got a cat food future.
Yeah, and basically what it's doing is causing the president to be willing to put everything on the table as well. And he's not negotiating. The Democrats seem to believe that they're negotiating from a position of strength, but the fact of the matter is they really aren't.
No, they aren't. If they remain oblivious to the fact that they're dealing with revolutionaries, they certainly aren't.
No, they certainly aren't.
Because always they have proceeded from this position that this was an ideological difference between two sides that are equally committed to the well-being of this nation.
Right. That both sides want the same thing, we just have different opinions as to how best to get there.
You know, like the difference between Baptists and Methodists.
Yeah. And
or elks and mooses.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is not that. I mean, this is...
Yep.
This is something. This is people who like the idea of self-government versus people who have become wholly inimical toward it. Is it not? I mean, am I overstating it?
No, I don't think you are. And because I think the case is being made that everything they're doing is in line with the priorities of the founders, and that's why this, Bob. I don't want to get into another area, but. That's why I think that this pervasive ignorance that we're confronting as a nation and people's inability to read critically and to see between the lines and to perceive agendas and all of this stuff is really frightening. I mean, the fact that people believe what they see in print, they believe what they're told on the surface is unbelievable. It's frightening. You know, we dealt last week here in West Virginia with a kids count report that said that 73% of third graders in West Virginia aren't reading up to par, aren't reading proficiently for what third graders ought to be. Well, if that's true in the third grade, then these people are lost. If already they're behind in the third grade, you know, what are we going to do?
And of course, I pick up the paper this morning and I find out that apparently the remedy to West Virginia's education ills, Dr. Bill, is to drug test every kid who gets to drive his own car to school in Kanawha County.
Right.
And they're already doing it in other counties, and Kanawha County is, and then, of course, for those who don't know, Kanawha County is the county that holds the seat of government, is the most populous county in the state of West Virginia.
Exactly.
We're going to drug test the students, and as a civil libertarian... My hackles, I mean, the little hairs on the back of my neck. No, I mean, I guess you can make somebody, when you consider meth and crack and things like that, you know, street obtained prescription narcotics, and there's not a community in this state that isn't burned up with it, I don't think, at least south of the Little Kanawha River. You can understand that response.
Yep.
But it is not... It's not a panacea, and what are you going... Okay, so little Johnny has meth in his blood, breath, urine, or hair. What are you going to do to little Johnny? Are we going to shuttle him into the school-to-prison pipeline? Is that going to remedy the educational ills of the state of West Virginia?
No, and that's what I, you know, that's what I'm saying is, you know, I really don't know, but I see a because... What's happening, Bob, is feeding off of the ignorance of our population, and the fact that we've been raised and educated in slogans and as long as you play to those slogans, you can say and do anything. as long as you can do, you can couch it in the fact that you're being consistent with and supportive of those slogans. I mean, the quote you read earlier, I mean, the use of the words freedom and liberty and all this stuff and putting them in capitals and all this stuff. And it's almost like if you, whatever you want to do, you can do as long as you're doing it in the name of liberty.
Right. There's an animated series out there called Family Guy in which the woman of the family, Lois, who lives in Rhode Island, is concerned about pollution. And so she decides to run for mayor and she's getting whipped. Until the family dog explains to her that whatever the answer to the question is, she should merely say 9/11.
Yeah.
And then whatever she wants, she gets, because yep. 9/11.
That's right. And everything that's associated with that, and George Bush standing there with that microphone. And that's what we want. We want to go back to the time when everybody was together and we didn't have the problems we did now. And so anything that you can do as long as you do it in the name of that. And that's what they're throwing the liberty in the name of these organizations, Freedom Works, and all of these other names, and they all have 501c3 status.
And I think this is important on a kind of epistemological level. They have made words like freedom and liberty and patriot, they have made to anybody who really has spent any time at all thinking about what those words mean, they have made those words hateful.
Yeah, they have. Because what they suggest is, I mean, and when John Winthrop talked about, you know, that there's two kinds of liberty, and the kind we're talking about is the freedom to do whatever you want as long as it's right, as long as it's what's permitted and what you're supposed to do. As long as you conform, you are free. It's when you try to non-conform that you're in trouble. Then the argument is that kind of freedom we can't put up with. It's inconsistent with authority, is what he argued. And so his definition of freedom is you are free as long as you conform. But the minute you cease to conform, Your freedom ought to be. We have the right to interfere with your freedom, and so the irony is, total freedom is when you lock up or silence everybody that doesn't agree with you.
Just to sort of extend the metaphor a little bit, we have been so inflamed since, you know, I don't think the attempt on the World Trade Center, and I don't think the USS Cole attack, and I don't even think the embassy attacks in Africa really got this country worked up, but we became positively inflamed after September 11th, 2001. Mm-hmm. And the irony, I think, and I'm going to share with you another quote from this guy who's leading this trucker thing in Washington, D.C. He says, "Speaking for only myself, if I have to be shot to make this happen, then so be it. I am willing to do what, all caps again, must be done to make this gov understand we will, all caps again, not stand down. It is my intent," and my is capitalized. It's like some sort of, you know, with the capitalization of German nouns. And stuff. I don't know. "It is my intent that this goes, all caps, peaceful, and law enforcement stand by."
Yeah.
But he's willing to be shot down. We have become what we said we hated. We have... Because, you know, there's a number of shorthand phrases, you know, Taliban Christianity, Tea Party Taliban. Statements like that are the same thing that come from the mouths of people who put on dynamite belts, aren't they?
Yes, yes. And so the irony is that the other side wins. I mean, if you believe there is another side, then they win because you've become exactly what it is you said you would never be, which is you're adopting the same tactics as they are. The only difference is you're right and they're wrong.
And what? And I find that terrifying.
It is.
I don't know if they really have that courage. I don't know if this guy was typing with a belly full of liquid courage. But what we're finding out, for instance, and and I hope I'm not taking too much of your time. I cherish these conversations. For instance, we found out since, well, my colleague Bo was in Washington, D.C. when all the shooting took place last week. And, you know, there was something about that, Dr. Bill, that just didn't quite, it seemed sort of a bubble off plum. And now we found out with a week gone by that the woman who was immediately vilified by the for-profit media as crazy, she was shot. She wasn't shot when they were shooting at her when she was running away, driving away. They shot her when she stepped out of her car.
Yeah.
After she'd wrecked it. That's when they gunned her down.
Yeah. And by that time, she was in a situation where she couldn't do any more damage than she'd already done.
Right. And she didn't come out with a gun, and she didn't have a dynamite belt strapped on. Anything.
No. So what we did is we made it impossible that we would ever find out what was motivating her.
Right. You know, and so you've got people like this. Is it safe to say that maybe can one infer that there might be a few screws loose among any for a guy who drives truck for a living to say, I want to shut down D.C., see the politicians arrested and tried for treason? And remember, the penalty for treason is, of course, capital.
Yep.
And in order to do that, I'm willing to be shot or shoot somebody. I mean, does that raise mental health issues, Dr. Bill?
It really does. But and you made a comment earlier and said it's unclear whether the person that said that is willing to actually do that. But the people who are hearing you, they have no idea what the mentality is of the people that they're communicating with, the people who are on the receiving end of this thing. And you've got some people that are on the edge that when they hear this, they figure, hey, it's open season, now I can do it.
Right, and that was the point I was getting to with the woman in D.C. We know now that she was convinced that Obama had shut down Stamford, Connecticut, and that Obama was electronically surveilling her personally.
Yeah. Yes, and she. Yeah.
And this is the end product of all of that kind of rhetoric that has been bouncing around this country.
That's
by people with very real agendas going in the other direction. You know, there's a very real NSA, and I always say NSA / military industrial corporate complex problem. Domestic spying. The door was opened by Bush, and apparently Barack Obama's administration kept walking right on through.
That's right.
But there is no way to know what impact what we say is going to have on someone else. That's why I try to stay away from eliminationist rhetoric, and I hate eliminationist rhetoric, and because you don't want I would personally not ever want to be a part of anything like that. But
no.
We've seen time after time there was the guy who went to shoot up the Tides Foundation in California because Glenn Beck had told them that they were a bunch of Soros-funded, pinko, commie, socialist, progressive, whatever. So he and the guy who shot up the Unitarian Church in Tennessee did so because Bill O'Reilly and Bernard Goldberg had told him that they were the enablers of socialism, and on and on and on it goes.
That's right, and it's kind of like the people that argue that guns don't commit the you know, unbalanced people do. But when you say these kinds of things, you are basically providing opportunity and occasion to people that might be unbalanced, and then to throw up your hands and say, I didn't do anything, all I did was make a statement. These people are responsible for how they interpret the statement, and the point is you don't make those kinds of statements because you don't know who you're speaking to. And this effort in Washington that you're talking about with the trucks and everything, this is frightening.
And it only gets worse because on November 19th, 2013, about a week and a day after the trucker thing, a right-winger, a really toxic right-winger named Larry Klayman has declared that November 19th will be a peaceful anti-Obama revolution. And he says, we the people must act now. Sitting back and living off the past riches of the country until the bank runs dry is a formula for disaster. Our founding fathers, there they go, would not have sat on the deck of the Titanic as it sank, never mind the fact that they were all dead by the time the Titanic was even built, and we cannot either. That is, if we are serious about maintaining and preserving our freedoms, not just for ourselves, but for future generations. And he says other things like, we the people must rise up en masse and make it clear to our professed leaders that they better perform with morality, ethics, and respect for the law, or else be driven by us out of town. That is precisely what we have in mind with my call for an Occupy Washington. And there it is. The very concept of Occupy has now been co-opted by the incredibly well-financed right wing.
That's right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They, you know, and you're right. The Occupy movement. Wow, it's unbelievable. They're co-opting and Bob, I don't know. You've got 2 hours more ahead of you this evening to talk about.
Well,
this.
And the sad thing is, I think we will have no trouble whatsoever filling it, Dr. Bill. I don't hold, and neither do you. None of us here holds ourselves out as any sort of prognosticator or seer or possessor of received wisdom. But sometimes it gets so obvious that anybody who cares, anybody who has any interest in understanding that a law that a line is something that runs between two points, begins to see that something is amiss.
Yeah, you've got to be able to, as they say after 9/11, you got to be able to connect the dots, and when the dots connect, you got to be willing to see what the dots tell you, and that's what bothers me is that all of this stuff is unspoken, and what we're doing is we're chasing shadows, and all of these things, Obamacare and everything else. Are merely visible examples of an agenda that's much, much less obvious and much potentially much more serious.
Well, and I guess then the question I'm going to ask you by way of wrapping up, Dr. Bill.
Okay, Bob.
Is what is the nexus between, or maybe it's a disconnect, between this kind of violent rhetoric and First Amendment guarantees of freedom of expression? It seems to me we have actual constitutional precedent, and we have laws that say you can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
Right.
So does a free people just have to tolerate this until the country explodes in flame? And then say at least we had freedom of speech?
No, because there's the screaming fire in a movie in a crowded theater basically suggests that there's an element of responsibility that is necessary to make these freedoms operable. And the idea that you can say anything you want, and that's what the danger is of the throwing around of this word freedom and stuff, because all of it is freedom without response. The implication is it's all about freedom. None of it is about responsibility. And what these people do is manipulate or couch everything as a threat to people's freedom, when in fact what they are doing is not addressing the issue of responsibility and the issue of responsibility of people to each other. And the implication is it's about me, it's about my truck, it's about, you know, my income or you
my
know,
$90 million a year to Glenn Beck.
Yeah, I don't know, you know. But that's and they're couching in that terms, which make it very personal to people who don't think in the kind of depth that's necessary to really appreciate what's going on here. And that's why I believe. I mean, I said at the beginning of the program today, two and a half hours ago, that it's absolutely vital that you stay on, because you're providing an opportunity for people who think they see this to verbalize it, to talk about it, to discuss it. And it's got to stay out there, and it's got to stay in the marketplace. because nobody wants this stuff even raised. Nobody wants...
Especially not the folks behind the curtain.
No, exactly. The people behind the curtain do not want the fact that the dots connect to be made public information. Because there might be people, there might be too many people that would go along with it. And so the issue is, you've got to keep it out there. We've got to keep it on the air, because that what's happening is, the whole idea is that in the name of patriotism, for God's sake, they'll silence it. And we can't, we just can't let that happen.
Well, you know, I mean, we talked about something last week on the program, particularly the first sentence of Section 4 of Article 4 of the 14th Amendment, which says the validity of the national debt shall not be challenged or questioned. That shall not is mighty powerful language. And, of course, the 14th Amendment ends with, and Congress shall have the power to make such laws as are necessary to put into effect this amendment. Well, the fact of the matter is, and I have, and maybe it's just because I'm a terrible student of the Constitution, but I have heard no one except me in my ravings note that that is actually a prior restraint on speech. And prior restraints, if the city council says, no one shall be allowed to question the four-way stop at the corner of Oak and Main.
Yes.
Then the ACLU will sue, and the court will compel the city to provide a compelling state reason for imposing such a prior restraint, because prior restraints on speech are absolutely anathematic to the idea of freedom of expression.
That's right. That's
and,
right.
And yet here you have, tucked away in Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, a prior restraint particularly aimed at the legislature, Dr. Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have I got it right? I mean, they're saying no one shall question the validity of the public debt.
Right.
And yet you've got an entire Congress full of Tea Partiers who do nothing but that.
Well, doing that, exactly.
And it goes all the way back to George W. Bush paying a little visit to Parkersburg, West Virginia, and tapping a file cabinet and saying, this is just a file cabinet full of worthless IOUs.
Yeah.
Well, under the 14th Amendment, that's an impeachable offense.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we consider that within the context of freedom of expression, and yet at the same time, under that self-same freedom of expression, these ignorant teabaggers are running around out there hollering for... I mean, because everything I've shared with you is verbatim, and these are calls for the violent overthrow of the government.
Exactly, they are.
I thought there were laws against that.
They are. And that's what I'm saying, is that we have allowed them to dictate the agenda. We have, you know, I mean, and this is not the same thing. It's a little bit late for this now, but progressives, liberals, have allowed conservatives to define them. What they have done, they've moved the center so far right, and then they've basically suggested that anybody to the left of them is a radical, when in fact everybody to the left of them is a centrist. And they have totally changed the nature of the conversation and the discussion, and they've got away with it, and we've let them do it. And the liberal media has let them do it.
The liberal media.
I mean, that's why
I giggle. I can't help it. You and me, Dr. Bill, and Rick Smith after, and a few other progressives like Mike Malloy and Sam Cedar, we're the liberal media. Yeah. And there's not much of us.
There's not much of it. And that's what I'm saying, is that where people are getting their information, that's why it's absolutely vital that this perspective remain out there, and that people continue to have the opportunity to point these things out and say these things, because eventually, you know, more and more of the community is going to be exposed to this. And especially when there's clearly an effort to silence it and to paint this these perspectives as being unpatriotic and un-American and everything else, and they are not. They are part of the marketplace of free speech, which is what this society supposedly is about.
Right. I mean, that goes back, and I'm sure you've read the correspondence between Judge Learned Hand and Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr.
Yes.
That's a brilliant exchange, and it helped to really reshape Holmes's understanding of the First Amendment, because it was Judge Learned Hand who enunciated that principle that the remedy to bad speech is not to suppress the speech, but the remedy to bad speech is more speech.
Yes.
And I think, going back to a previous point, I think that is an absolutely true philosophical restatement if all parties are going forward in good faith. But if one half is not going forward in good faith, and one half's goal is the absolute immolation of government, then I think you're dealing with a whole different kettle of fish.
Well, yeah, it makes the situation a lot more dire. That's for darn sure. But given the mechanism, given the tools we've got at hand, I mean, what you've got right now is a major one, and that's what I worry about. I worry about keeping it out there and keeping it on the air, because we're dealing with a population that is so used to being told what to think and what to believe and what's true and what's not true, and it's frightening, because too many people have lost the ability to think for themselves and to discover truth for themselves. And the irony is, I mean, my perspective from the founders is that was anathema to the founders. The founders really believed that truth was something that you discover, that you think and you reason and you research and you read and you ultimately get on track and you pursue truth for yourself. But to assume that truth is revealed and that we don't have to do anything except wait for the people that we trust to tell us what's true is frightening. That's what we're into right now. That's what the Glenn Becks of the world are asking us to do. They're manipulating history. They're rewriting history. They're bastardizing history, and they're doing it all for their argument is that my end game, the ends justify the means. Whatever we have to do to win is patriotic. Is within reason, as they define it. And that is frightening. And what all we've got going for us right now is the opportunity to point out the lies and the inconsistencies and the hypocrisies and all the rest of it, and hope that enough people will tie into it that we can begin to counter it. And the only way to do that is to make sure that there's an opportunity for alternative points of view to be heard. And that's what you've got here, Bob.
You know, it sounds a lot more impressive when you say it, Dr. Bill.
Well, I it's really important, and I really believe it. I mean, you know, I mean, I've listened to programs, I've listened to some of you. I don't agree with them, but at the same time, they need to be heard, and people need to. And if what they're saying has validity, it'll withstand criticism and controversy and everything else. And if it doesn't have substance, it won't. But you can't just silence it and make predeterminations as to what people ought to hear and what people ought not to hear. That is absolutely not right. And I don't think our system can survive that way. And that's what we're into. I mean, when I read that there are people when I feel, you know, when I'm saying to myself, now what do I have to do to make sure that I can make the car payment next month? And I read that these people are spending hundreds of millions of dollars. And I'm saying, my God, what are we dealing with here? This is way beyond, you know, there's more zeros there that I can deal with.
Yeah.
You know? And it's scary, because it kind of suggests that these people who really know how important this game is. And once you realize that they believe it's that important, then it has to be that important for you and me and who knows, who knows who else.
Indeed.
We've got to keep plugging away at it. So,
well, and plug away we shall, and I hope people by way of announcement, I bet you've never even heard of the People's Podcast Awards, have you?
No, not until tonight.
Well, you've been nominated, and I'm hoping that a lot of people will go and nominate you under the category of education. nominate the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility with Dr. Bill O'Brien. The post on how to go about doing all that, which was kindly authored by Dr. John, is up now at headonradionetwork.com. So you can go there, and Dr. John has provided all the necessary information for nominating this program and Dr. Bill's program, and I hope people will. So
they will too.
Yeah, indeed. I'd love to go hang out in Vegas with you, Dr.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Wow.
Watch you lock up a machine or something.
Oh, God, yeah, right. Hey, Bob, have a good one.
Dr. Bill, it's been wonderful. And by the way, I just want to tell you, your horn paycheck for this week will include triple time for this extra hour, okay?
Oh, that's okay. I thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it.
Dr. Bill, have a good evening.
Thank you, and thank you to those listening.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Bill O'Brien, the one, the only, the inimitable. There's no one like him. And again, Dr. Bill is live Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays from 4 to 6 p.m. right in front of this program. If you're not listening to Dr. Bill, well, you're getting left in history's dust. Because Dr. Bill has forgotten more history than I will ever learn. And the thing is, he ain't forgot much. But if you don't mind, pretty please even, and I will remind, because the voting only goes on through the 15th, please go to headonradionetwork.com, click on the post about the People's Podcast Awards, and nominate this program and Dr. Bill O'Brien's programs. And like I said, the instructions on how to do that are all there in clear and concise form, because that's the only way that Dr. John knows how to write. And I'm grateful for that, because it would probably, if I'd tried to do that myself, it would have read like a cross between Lewis Carroll and William Faulkner and James Joyce, and probably would have been wound up being nominated for, you know, a free trip to Guantanamo by the time it was all over with. So thank you, Dr. John, for doing that, and thank you to everybody who goes and does that. Of course, I would be remiss if I did not note that this is a listener-supported program, and we've got some plans underway to hopefully take a little bit of the pressure off here. But this is a listener-supported program, and many thanks to those who over the weekend contributed either by subscription. You know, there's a subscription button there now, so your contributions can just come in all automatic-like if you want to do that on whatever date you prefer to set up. But to those who over the weekend helped out, because we closed the week in rather a dire hole. So thanks very much to Ryan. And thanks ever so kindly to George. George added a note saying, "I hope this helps a little to keep the morans at bay." It does. It does indeed. And thanks just now to Ed, who said, "I hope this helps," and it does help, because our evening goal is about $150 just to keep even with paying the bills. And as of close of program Thursday, the hole had already gotten some several hundreds of dollars deep. And your contributions are what keeps that from getting any deeper, and hopefully helps us fill in the hole, as it were. Had a note from Ryan, who said, "Thank you and your family and everyone in the commune for continuing the horn week in and week out." Signed, Ryan from Massachusetts. God save it. God save it indeed. So thanks, Ryan. And thanks, everybody, who helps keep all of this going. It is Moran Monday on the horn, and the teabag and Morans getting in their big old trucks and driving to D.C. to restore the Constitution that they apparently, if you study their positions, despise and hate. Well, that's kind of the very picture of Moranity, isn't it? So there's that. Let's see, note coming in from Jeremy. Oh, by the way, thanks to Grant, whose subscription hit over the weekend, and that was very helpful. Jeremy just noting, please thank Dr. Bill for all he does. And indeed I will, and I have. Thanks for that, Jeremy. We got more morans. Oh, mercy. I think that verse, the morans ye have always with ye. But that's the thing. Just to be a moran is not necessarily to be a clown. To be a moran, well, for instance, the progenitor of the word moran, I'm sure he's a teabagger now, but back in the day, back when George Bush was starting his war against the helpless people of Iraq, was standing at a counter protest with his head wrapped in a Stars and Stripes bandana and a St. Louis Cardinals t-shirt on, and he was holding up a sign that said, "Get a brain, morans," because that's what he thought the people over there protesting the slaughter of innocents were. They were morans. And that, of course, is the origin of the word morans, not morons. That is original teabagger spelling. Original frontier gibberish. But morans, see, he was a dangerous moran because he was supporting something that wound up costing more than 1 million lives of innocent civilians. Statistically and mathematically determined. George W. Bush was responsible for 1/6 of the Holocaust, okay? Can we just say that? The morans aren't just funny sometimes. Sometimes the morans are dangerous. And they're getting more dangerous by the day. So we'll take a break. It's 12 minutes past the hour, 12 minutes past 7 o'clock here in the Eastern... We're still in daylight time, right? Eastern Daylight Time Zone. And your nominations, of course, are always welcome. I've got a couple in here from our buddy Marty. And there are more to come, I'm sure. You know the number, 304-658-3333. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D is how you reach the program that way. You're welcome either way that you choose. If you just want to shoot an email, it's Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. If you want to use the Twitter, it's @BobKincaid. There's a pattern emerging here, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. And yes, once again, Bob Kincaid on the Facebook. Any way you want to do it is just dandy by me. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained. It rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, I mean nothing, hon, if it ain't free. Me and my Bobby again. From the Kentucky coal mine to the California sun, yeah, Bobby shared the secrets of my soul. Through all kinds of weather, through everything that we've done, yeah, Bobby, baby, kept me from the whole world. One day of near Celine's long, I let him slip away. enough for me and my Bobby.
Maybe after their teabagger constitutional convention, that'll become the new motto of the land. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Of course, that is the immortal Janis Joplin. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is 18 minutes past the hour. And let's see. So I read you, I shared in the course of my conversation with Dr. Bill, the political musings of Earl Conlon, Tea Party Patriot Trucker. You know, I was told in a conversation that when I don't like something, my voice drips with scorn and contempt. I was happy to hear that. Because if I'm trying to express scorn and contempt, I want to make sure that the scorn and the contempt that I am expressing are absolutely unmistakable, and the subject of same be well aware of it. So Earl Conlon out there with your freedom protecting goons and your big truck, you goddamn moron, please understand that I hold you in nothing but scorn and contempt. I have contempt for your ignorance. I have scorn for the pride you take in that ignorance. And I wonder how you manage to get your shoes tied every morning, you godforsaken moron, you. You don't deserve to live in a free country, you freak. So anyway, I shared with you some of the neither wit nor wisdom of Earl Conlon. Wolverines! You knew it was coming. It's already happened in the chat room. Wolverines! Yeah. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very kindly. Kevin advancing the cause just now and even signed up for a subscription at headonradionetwork.com. Just a recurring monthly contribution. It is deeply appreciated, Kevin. I want to share now with you something even... All right. It's one of those moments. Mom, Dad, Granny, Grandpa, Aunt, Uncle, Cousin, get little Timmy and little Cindy out of the room. Uncle Bob is going to be reading some nasty, nasty words that could not be read on... And see, here's one of those free speech problems I was talking with Dr. Bill about. Why is it that in an attempt to make clear how violent, how vile, how hateful these right-wingers are. Why is it that the for-profit media and anyone else who wants to broadcast on the airwaves that are allegedly owned by the public are forbidden from saying these words when they are direct quotes from people who despise the government of which the Federal Communications Commission is a part? Beats me. Okay, have I vamped long enough to get little Timmy and little Cindy out of the room? Good. These are, and I'm going to read them all. These are every last one of them. Tweets from either September the 30th or October the 1st, 2013, upon the occasion of the shutdown that the Republican Party imposed upon this country. Let us begin, and I'm calling names here. This comes from a Tumblr account called Public Shaming. So I hope I'm helping out in that. So we're going to use names. At 12:25 a.m. on the we're not going to be able to go in order because they're kind of scattered. But they start in late September and they go forward. Let's start with Samantha Brocky. She is at Sammy Speechless on Twitter. The word like is the third word in here, so I get to do the scorn and contempt thing again by doing the voice that has to come with anyone who... Right. Can someone like... assassinate the president or something? He really sucks at his job. Is that even legal to say? Oh, well, fuck you, Obama. Smiley face. And then this from Kira Renee, who on Twitter is at Kira, KYRARENE, 96. Young person, I assume. I feel like someone should just assassinate Obama already and his salt-stealing wife. Salt? I even looked up salt stealing. I try to be pretty well tuned in even to some of the weird crap the right wing says. Salt stealing wife? So Kira Renee, at Kira Renee 96, doesn't just want Barack Obama gunned down. He wants the mother of Barack Obama's children gunned, or she wants the mother of Barack Obama's children gunned down too. Then there is Faded, at Faded, F-A-D-E-D-D, underscore, white boy, who is Dusto, D-U-S-T-O-H-H. Really, Obama? Shut down the government? O-E, dumbass fucker. I'ma go ahead and say it. Someone needs to assassinate his ass. Are you picking up on the theme here? At Ion, I-O-N, underscore, capital C, capital N, capital E, a tweet account simply referred to as competition. What? This is work. And listen, Agent Fred, I'm not sharing this to encourage it. I am sharing this because the for-profit media cannot, and people need to understand the level of hatred and vitriol and potential violence that is out there so that they can not only understand the threat against President Obama and anybody that these freaks don't like, but the threat against they themselves. Because someone like who tweets this kind of stuff, who also happens to be one of those lawful gun owners, well, the paren L close paren drops away real quick, and they turn into an awful gun owner rather hasty fashion under many circumstances, most of which they perceive to obtain at any given moment. Can someone assassinate Obama? Like, why is he on the channel that Ellen come on? That got two retweets. Kai cross space, because it's K-A-I, and then a cross, and then S-P-A-C-E, at Kate space, K-A-I-T-S-P-A-C-E. My brother's rink is closed because of this government shit. Someone assassinate Obama, please. Gabby Diaz, at Gabby Lynn Diaz on Twitter. Man, fuck Obama. Somebody go shoot him. Rhonda DGAF, at the bitch in pink. I'm about to go find Obama and shoot him myself. Funky Flow, and that's funky with a PH, at ADMRNCN11. I hate reading what Obama ever has to say. Someone just shoot him. Hashtag problem solved. Ari period at Air Eana, A-I-R-E-A-H-N-A-H. So if someone decides to not pay their car, they're a deadbeat? Are you fucking kidding me? Someone please assassinate our, quote, president, unquote, period. Sam got right to the heart of the matter. That would be at Sam Hertzog, S-A-M-M-H-E-R-T-Z-O-G. Someone assassinate Obama already. At Kels Danny, K-E-L-S-D-A-N-I. Someone gonna, G-U-N-N-A, assassinate Obama during this shutdown, or... I think that was a hasty send. Kenna Lee 5, K-E-N-N-A-L-E-I-G-H 5, asks in all caps, can we kill Obama yet? Amy Thompson is creative. Amy Thompson included a photo of herself shooting the bird. Amy Ruth 11. Someone pulls, that's twit speak for please, someone please assassinate Obama. Hashtag terrorist. Hashtag Obama sucks. Hashtag fuck Obama. And then their twit pick. Then there's Michael Hazuda at M-I-C-H-A-E-L-H-A-Z-U-D-A. Fuck you, America, little a America. If the passport place is closed tomorrow and I can't get it in time for next week, I'm going to assassinate Obama. Hashtag shutdown. All of these get retweeted and favorited. Katie Sawyer, at K80Sawyer. Why can't someone assassinate Obama? One person can sacrifice their life for everybody. At Ashley May Hess, A-S-H-L-E-Y-M-A-Y-H-E-S-S, gets to the core of the problem, brevity being the soul of witlessness, not just wit. Can someone assassinate Obama yet? At call underscore me underscore Schmegs, S-H-M-E-G-S, that's Megan. For the love of God, will somebody please assassinate Obama's pathetic ass already? At Taylor Thompson, T-A-Y-L-O-R-T-H-M-P-S-N, wants to know, can someone just assassinate Obama already or something? At O-H-H underscore K-N-O-W, oh no, can someone just shoot Obama in the face already? That must be a Dick Cheney fan. At underscore Sarah Judice, S-A-R-A-J-U-D-I-C-E, says, someone needs to just shoot Obama and get this all over with, comma, just saying. Bebo at heatsnow_3 says someone needs to assassinate Obama. Danielle Eggleston at Danielle, DANIELLE_EGG. Someone take one for the team and shoot Obama in the head. Hashtag, this one has a graphic. After shoot Obama in the head, period, there's a little tiny picture of a revolver, and then the hashtag, I hate him so much. JoJo at Johanna Rakes, JohannaRakes, says, can someone just assassinate Obama already? We'd be a lot better off. At VVThomas33 says, and that person goes by Zach T, government shut down for the first time in 17 years and 800,000 people don't get a paycheck. Someone, again, a pattern, please assassinate Obama. Brittany at BMead, B-M-E-A-D, 1223. Obama shut down the government. Someone please shoot him. Impeach him. Something. So she's not totally committed to assassination. Something. Brendan at @R_IESO. We need to assassinate Obama or something, like he's fucking up the country. Keisley Segura at @KEISLEY_SEGURA says, this government situation has worked my last nerve. Someone just shoot Obama. And again, the little graphic of the revolver. Jackson Zenzen, just like it sounds, says, is someone going to shoot Obama yet or what? Brianna Dennis at Brianna, BRIANNA, Gene, JEAN, 94. Nothing personal, really. This is my personal favorite. Because, you know, nothing personal. But I wish somebody would assassinate Obama. Well, not really. But nevertheless, I fucking hate the narcissistic bastard. Brianna must be reading at 11th grade level. And then Keaton. At T. Keaton, KEETONSS. You knew we weren't going to get through this with it. Obama is showing everyone why there never was a nigger for president before. I'll gladly shoot his sorry ass. His family will die of cancer. Now, see, it was a little weird when the other one wanted to work Mrs. Obama in there. But, no, he's going... Keaton here wants Sasha and Malia to die of cancer. You think this is just politics? Because it's not. This is revolution. Or it's revolutionary, and not in a good way. It was within the last 2 years, maybe the last year, that I developed that I came up with the concept of cold civil war. Hello. Okay, thank you, Dr. John. Public shaming is a great use of social media, Dr. John says. That's run by Matt Binder, a producer on Sam Cedar's program. Awesome. I'd love to be able to give credit where it's due. Sam does great work, and apparently he's got a staff that does equally awesome work. Steve noting, of course, I imagine they're all self-proclaimed Christians. Of course. Wouldn't shock me a bit. Probably in church every time the door's open. Yeah, you do get the picture, Sparky. Sparky in the chat room says, I think we get the picture, Bob. You do. But... again, when you're talking about a nation of 330, 350, 380 million people, statistics come into play. And those are all just from the end of September and the first day of October. It's not like it's calmed down any. And I guess the academic question, or actually, well, maybe existential, how do you deal with this? In the chat room, Delayed says, scary thing is, these mostly appear to be the youth of our nation. Yeah. And what does that mean? Because I'm not going to sit here and tell you what it means. I don't necessarily know. But you may have an answer that I don't have. We need to understand what that means. Does it mean that they're simply politically ignorant? Or does it mean that they are beyond reach? That they are that their political worlds are as cast in stone as they're ever going to be, and that the likelihood that they're going to stop being that ignorant, that bigoted, and that stupid, and that hateful, and that violent is a number approaching absolute zero. Ron and Raleigh. Bob, could you post a positive guess as to how many of these tweets are from people of color? I love post-racial America. That's America spelled with three K's. Consider that these tweets, given speech patterns and such, indicate they're from white people under the age of 35. P.S. No visits by the Secret Service to any of them. The fact that President Obama is black makes him the cause of all problems. I want to go back and remind you of something that we found out when, about as quick as President Obama was elected back in 2008. Another one of those things that I only picked up on, you know, and that's because I'm a old DJ. Remember the stupid Secret Service code names they had for Dim Leader and Dick Cheney? You know, he was like, Dick Cheney was like Face Shooter or something like that. No, he was Angler. Angler. Because he liked to fish. So he's Angler. The code name that was announced for President Obama was Renegade. That is the Secret Service's code name for the President of the United States. Renegade. And because I'm an old DJ, I posited a theory for where Renegade came from. Renegade, 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 Renegade. And there it was, back in the dim and dusty and darkened neurons of my brain, remembering midnight shifts, pressing buttons to make the music play. And a lyric from a song. Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law. Hangman is coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long. And you may recall the Styx tune and how that's all kind of a cappella and operatic, and then somebody screams, no! And the rock and roll starts, and the first line is, the jig is up. Renegade, our first black president. The jig is up. Words mean things. Words mean things. 21 minutes before the hour and time, I say, for us to go to the phones, 304-658-3333. Fear not. If you've never tried calling the program, you are more than welcome to do so. If you're new to the program, I encourage you to do so, because you're going to find this to be about the easiest phone call you're ever going to make to a radio program. Nobody's going to sit there and query you for what you want to talk about. You're just going to be on the air in a little bit. 304-658-3333. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, sir.
How you doing, Bill?
Well, I want to thank you for playing Joplin. I was, if that's who it was, it sure sounded like her. It didn't sound like an imitator.
No, that was her.
Yeah, because I, in 68, I caught her at Public Hall here in Cleveland and Blood, Sweat, and Tears with David Clayton Thomas, who was an imitator of Bobby Bland, which I can understand why I got a lot from him, from Bland. I got a lot of phrasing and such. Quite an act. But now getting that back to the world, the sad world of reality, the stuff you just read is the saddest crap in the world.
Yeah, it is. It is that. I think more so than anything else, Bill, It's sad.
The illiterates, for one thing, just plain out and out illiterates. And then this stuff with these truck drivers. Who the hell do they think is calling the economic shots for them? Do they think it's the president?
Oh, it's the EPA with their jackboots down on their freedom, love, and liberty protecting necks.
Well, from what I heard from guys who were driving when I was, that are close to my age, as time went on, the companies got cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And I knew some young kids who were hired by them 20 years ago, and I wonder if these guys drive my Volkswagen, much as a semi.
Well, and really, if you want to know about the demise of the trucking industry, there's a past master who follows me on this network after the close of this program.
Yep.
Rick Smith can give you chapter and verse and line readings on what happened to the truck driver in America. And it has a lot to do with, how about that, Bill, union busting.
Yep. It's the old story. Once you break the union, you can pay them whatever the hell you want. Hell, I belonged to the garment workers union in my first job. And was a stand-up milk driver, driving those stand-drive Divcos.
Because
they could jump in and out of it faster. The funniest thing I ever saw was a guy trying to learn to drive standing up, and it wasn't me for a change. This guy makes a turn and goes out the door. At least the truck didn't go over him. I saw that happen to another drunk. I know he fell out of his van and almost ran himself over. Just, where are we going? Because what you talked about tonight, I'll take you back to the Birchers and the Goldwater era. That's what these people were like then.
Yeah, but there's a difference there, Bill, that I think is worth.
Were more illiterate, the Birchers.
But there's also a difference there that back in the heyday of the Birchers and the Goldwater types, you had to really make an effort to share your hate around, and it actually became kind of that everybody sort of knew you were a nasty person, but you had to have a mimeograph machine, and you had to roll those sheets off one after another, one at a time. Along comes the Xerox machine, the photocopier. It gets a little bit easier, but not much, and that's still expensive enough to be outside the reach of a lot of people. But along comes the internet, there's some social analysis to be done here. A lot of us were toddling along thinking that maybe this crap had diminished over time, that generation had gone to their long homes. That the grave, which is the only solution to some social ills, had finally begun to make a difference. And here's the internet, and bang! No, they're not gone. There's more of them than there ever were.
A lot of these folks are culturally and functionally illiterate. There's no doubt about it. I'm a lousy typist. I always was. Never did learn to do it right. Never was quick, Well, my hands weren't quicker. They were a lot quicker around a fishing reel than they were with a typewriter, or they weren't bad with a set of craftsman wrenches either, but you can't do everything, But that I never have heard such. Well, I liked Leno when he used to do that thing, go out on the street and talk to people. You really got a cultural lesson there. These people wouldn't know their elbow from anything,
Yeah, Bill, but see, the funny thing about those Leno bits is you could sort of make an assumption that for every person who gave a really dumbass answer, there were five that got it right and didn't sound like morons. And they just got dropped on the cutting room floor when the bit was edited together.
I mean, kind of,
you can't do that with these tweets.
No. I don't know. I probably didn't get the education that I should have. My friends, they bust my chops on a daily basis. That's what you get for, not having the stick-to-itiveness to go to college and get that degree. Because that was a key to a decent job in the old days. Now, I don't know what a key to a decent job is today. I guess it's your birth certificate today is the key to money, where you're born. And, I was a poor kid growing up, and we had
your mother and father's name on the birth certificate.
Well, that helps a little, because and the amount of drugs that are going on in this country. I saw so much of that crap with the pill heads. I have no use for it, because Oh, yes, yeah, speed. Dexedrine was not a bad deal if you were my age and delivering milk and you were up late. You took one, you went to work, and you came home in a hot bath and a good night's sleep. But the problem with that crap is with some people, addicting is addicting. Look, the cigarettes got me. And but that's what happens when you start smoking when you're 13, too, you know. And especially in the 50s, if you didn't smoke, you sure weren't Humphrey Bogart, you know.
No.
You were not a tough guy. And the media, the advertising media plays to this crap. They jump on something. All I've heard this weekend is about Miley Cyrus. Now, I give a damn, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind meeting somebody that looked like her when I was that age, that's for damn sure. But, you know, that's not a great entertainment to me. But, well, of course, neither was her old man in the school that he came from. He was nowhere compared with Hank and Hank Snow and people of that, you know, ilk.
Well, hell, Billy Ray Cyrus wasn't fit to carry Tom T. Hall's the sweat socks.
Exactly. And there's a lot of that, and but I don't know what the hell is going on in school. Are these kids learning anything? I know my history teacher friend tells me they've cut his, you know, they were cutting his teaching plans to hell to nothing. And I don't know where we're going with people that are this ignorant. Now these truck drivers, I don't know what the hell they're blaming the president for, because they don't really understand how the damn government works.
Because they're teabaggers. And like Dr. Bill was saying, they have been told that the font of all evil is, you know, that black man in our White House.
Yeah, that's, I've heard that years ago when he first ran, And I've even heard a few of those guys turn it around now, and they said, you know, he's doing what he can. Although, for those of us who bend to the left, he doesn't move that far enough anyway.
I mean, look, I've got, well, let me share something with you here, Bill. I've got an email from Tim in L.A., and he asks, under the subject line, kind of being counterproductive, are these Christian right-wingers trying to dissuade us from supporting Obama? I mean, I can say Obama is a war criminal, or Obama sucks the teats of the corporations, or even Obama supports the killing of the poor by allowing mountaintop removal. But the right couldn't care less.
No,
they support what he is doing and hate him because of his ethnicity.
Yes.
If these morons want support from lefties, racism is not the tactic to use to change our minds. What it does is reinforce our fight to end racism and thus distracts us from making our president accountable. In other words, the left don't want anything to do with the racist teabaggers. We fight against racism, and Obama essentially skirts on. And he says, P.S., I wonder if this is the DCCC's way to make Obama the victor by silencing the true left of Obama's crimes, as Mike Malloy et al. Have mentioned many times. And that's kind of the point here. If I sit down, and I've had this conversation, Bill, so this is not hypothetical. If I sit down with a teabagger, and the teabagger starts talking about teabaggy things, because it only takes one or two sentences tops before you go, oh, one of those.
Where you identify it, yep.
And then you try, and instead of trying to correct them on what they're wrong on, you come back at them and say, no. My problem with Obamacare is the fact that we're using millions of dollars of the taxpayers' money to prop up an absolutely dysfunctional, unsustainable model of corporatism.
Yeah.
And they just sit there and their mouths open up and the drool falls out, and you can say, you know, and I got problems with people being drone struck, and I've got problems with domestic spying, and you can rattle off problem after problem after problem you have, and then you come up and you say, and that's why I've got to tell you that somebody's lying to you, but because Barack Obama is not a liberal, and Barack Obama is certainly not a socialist, because I'm both, and I get to say who is and who ain't, based upon a rational analysis of behavior that marks one as such. Barack Obama is a center-right politician in an industrial empire.
Yeah.
and they're lost.
Well,
and what about, because even if you agree with them, but what about Benghazi?
Oh, you mean, I like to tell them, you mean the place where Rommel and Montgomery fought back and forth, huh? And they look at you like, who? Never mind, you tell them.
You know, what about the, he's a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, and, Jesus, you're kidding.
Really?
And at that point, you're done.
Because, Bob, I have some bad attitudes about the Turkish Empire, when they came rolling out as far as Vienna, Austria twice, except most people couldn't tell you where Vienna, Austria is on a map. If you look at the distance, that was a hell of a move those folks made by foot and horse. And again, they were religious on the front, but the real deal was how much can we steal? You know, religion was the cover for grand theft, and power. It's been that way for as long as I can ever remember reading about. Somebody with some religion or the other wanted to jam it down somebody's throat and pick their pocket at the same time. And the modern guy does it, I said, Ernest Angley has a good all-you-can-eat place down in Chicago Falls. You can stuff your face down there cheap. But I always said if I went down to see him about my eyes, he'd poke me in the ear, and when he was done, I couldn't hear anymore either. How you going to do? But, it just if I wasn't so damned old, it would scare the hell out of me because it doesn't make much difference to me at this point. I was out of my doctor's today, and he said, well, you're doing pretty good. Yeah, thank you, sir. And, it's always good to hear, even though I know better, because, whatever. But I just feel for these kids, like your kids, and that have to face this stuff, because this stuff is scary. What you and Dr. Bill were talking about was scary. And I have this pet theory that if we had really, really crushed... And yet the Southern working man paid through the nose after the Civil War. There's no doubt about it. And I always said about the bunch of guys who took off out of Oklahoma and ended up on the West Coast. Do they even know to this day why the family ended up on the West Coast? It wasn't a pleasure trip, And the coal mine.
No, that's why there's a famous book about it.
Yes. Coal miners, it was a tough job. If your boss was Jesus Christ, it would still be a tough and dangerous job. But if your boss was a greedy son of a bitch, it was really a bad, miserable job. It was unsafe. I mean, science alone, it was unsafe. When a canary in a coal mine was your warning of gas, that's not really a good situation.
There was a newspaper article, and the Charleston Gazette has retreated behind a paywall, unfortunately, and so you can only read limited amounts, but I happened to run across it this weekend, a place called Red Ash, which is, of course, just a ghost town in the New River Gorge now, but was once part of the coal boom. Is another one of those, and there's an island there with unmarked graves, just depressions in the earth. And it started out, they built a pest colony on Red Ash Island in the middle of the New River when there was a smallpox outbreak in the mining camp. And people with smallpox were sent over to Red Ash Island.
Yeah, sent over there and get out of our way and croak on your own.
But then later they used it for a more burial space because the Red Ash coal mine exploded. And when the Red Ash coal mine exploded, they sent in a rescue team to look for survivors. And, of course, they had, what carbide is, right?
Yep.
Well, the lamps were run on carbide.
Yep.
And the carbide lamps set off the gas, so the 22 rescue workers were killed as well. And then they had another explosion. And so that's who they think is buried on Red Ash Island. There's no end to the torment of working people.
Well,
in our history, and yet, at the same time, this is roughly along the same in the same time period where eventually Mary Harris Jones, Mother Jones, would come down and say, "When I die, I'm going to tell God about West Virginia because He has apparently not heard the suffering down here." Eventually the idea of the Union movement took hold, but then they shot themselves in the foot by arming themselves and trying to go to war. And so the Union movement didn't take off until enlightened legislation was passed in the first Roosevelt administration, called the National Labor Relations Act. And no sooner was that enshrined in law than 20 years later or so, 15 years later maybe, it was gutted by the Taft-Hartley Act, which, as I was informed Thursday night in the chat room, was passed into law. The Republican Congress overrode a presidential veto to put that into law.
Was that the Congress that was elected in 40?
Maybe 50. Maybe 50.
Later on? Because I know the Republicans got control of the Congress right after the war. And Truman had to battle. And during the Korean War, the guys who made bullets were screwing around. And he took over the plants. And then the court came in and said, "You can't do that." Although, you know, here it was, they were producing something that was needed by people you sent to war in Korea.
Right.
They're trying to make more money. It just leaves me, I can't believe those. I mean, I don't even mess around with any of that Facebook crap is crap to me, but the stuff I get, that picture of some guy and his dog, that's nice. I got dog pictures all over.
Really? You found a dog picture on the Facebook? I thought it was all cats.
Oh, cats? Well, I don't mind. I like animals, but I ended up with six dogs at one point because you lived in the inner city. Every time you turned around, and the first two that I had together, the pit mix and the lab mix, they chased the guy out of my house. So they were entitled to whatever I could give them from there on, you know, because I was happened to bag that night. And the next day I went out and bought an alarm system and wired the house up, you know.
So that you could get half in the bag and feel somewhat secure about it.
Yeah. Well, I knew I heard noise, but when I got up...
That was a joke, Bill. It was a joke.
You know, somebody stuck a hand in a door and got his hand chewed up a little bit. Good for them, you know.
Yeah, see, if it had been later, there would have been DNA evidence left over.
And I said, one of my buddies taught school to a guy who resigned from Congress out in Lake County. And he says they have cut back, from the time he started till the time he retired, they kept cutting back and cutting back.
Well, you mentioned education a little bit ago, Bill, and let's get something real straight here. There are very few political accidents, and the state that we currently see among a whole lot of young folks is a created state.
Yeah.
One of the early right wing tenets was that. Remember during the Republican presidential pageant season when Rick Perry of Texas famously forgot the three government agencies that he would eliminate? Well, one of them was the Department of Education, because eliminating the Department of Education has been a central point of the right wing for a generation now.
Well, that started with Kennedy, didn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
It got to be a much bigger thing than it had been before. And I don't think they teach enough of things that when I say the word depression, they say, "Oh, take some tranquilizers." No, that's not what not the kind of depression I was talking about.
Yeah, try again.
That kind of depression, I'm better off grabbing a fishing rod and going to a nice, quiet place and waiting for steelhead at this time of the year, which I'd be doing, instead of, you know, getting the nice, peaceful. Well, there was one lake that had electric motors only, and it was close to a place where air balloons would fly out of, and you'd be down there in peace and quiet and silenced, and there'd be deer drinking from the one end of the lake. You could see them, and then these balloons would come over, and, oh, man, what a way to... to unwind mentally and, you know, get peace back in your life. And then the hustle. I was a baseball fan. I actually, my mother took me downtown. I was 5 years old, and I watched the Wolf, these champion Indians, parade by. And that's the last time they won it, too, by golly.
Yeah, it is.
And
Bob Feller.
Yeah, Feller, Lemon, those guys were, you know, Dobie had a good year, and Page came up. Page was signed, and I think he won six games, and the Indians finished in a dead tie with the Red Sox. And there was a playoff game. You know, but everything is money today with sports, and it's like, come on. That's not what we played it for when we were kids. You played it because you loved it. But anyway, I won't tie you up anymore, but this what you're talking about is downright scary, because I don't know which way the Army's going to go. Because I know which way the Army went in 1860.
Yeah.
And if that happens...
Well, remember, there's a movement out there, Bill, called Oath Keepers.
Oh, yeah. They've had me use a few oaths when I heard of them, yes. I called upon the guy they believe in. I used to call upon him a lot when I was working on cars. Every time I smashed a hand with when the wrench slipped, and oh, Jesus Christ!
Oh, you never called on him to damn the thing that you were working on.
Oh yes, yeah. Maybe that's why I had so much trouble with cars. I kept damning him every time I fixed one thing. Something else would go by a week later. I quit damning it. Well, hang in there. But I just say I'm not a big one on this Facebook crap, and my friends, we're all old people, and. I tell her, hey, if you want to talk to me, let's talk. I mean, my ears are working. My mouth works too much.
All right. We have talked long enough to get a tweet in from Isaac.
Oh.
You know how this is going to go.
Oh, yeah.
So Isaac wants to know,
mm-hmm.
How was the dinner with the ladies in your building this weekend?
The cooking... Always, these are Eastern European ethnic ladies, and man, you want to smell a pork roast? Whew! And my grandmother being, my mom's mother being coming over from Germany, she could do things with a pork. I got to a point where I had a rotisserie on a gas grill, and I'd put a big piece of pork on there and start that rotisserie and then finish it up. Pouring peaches or cherries over the top of it. I got pretty good.
Oh.
Yeah, Bob, my mother's first husband was Italian, so the way I was taught to, if you're going to make meatballs, you go out and you get veal, beef, and pork. It's not just beef.
No.
And you go to a place in the, like downtown, the West Side Market here.
Yeah, I can tell already this is going to hurt me.
Yeah, well, you can get Italian sausages that taste like something. Oh, and, oh, man. I better watch it here. I'll be calling for, there's a place that delivers those nice Euro sandwiches.
Yeah.
And that's, in fact, I weighed a little bit too much at the doctor's today. I didn't like that. You know, and my health aide is one of those women who, you don't eat enough. You know, lady, I ate too damn much all my life. Don't give me that.
Well, you've been busted. Isaac says you're avoiding the question.
Yeah, well...
And it sounds to me like you're going to continue to avoid it, Bill.
Well, when I don't know, Bob.
You're a gentleman at heart, and there's no getting around it.
Well, beside that, when you're a musician, you know, folks get old. I'm not young either. I look in the mirror and say, who is that old fart looking back at me? Anyhow, hang in there, but you guys hit it on the head, Dr. Bill. These people scare the living crap out of me.
Doesn't he just nail it out of the park every time he opens the microphone?
What?
I said, doesn't Dr. Bill just nail it out of the park every time he opens the microphone?
That's probably what my friends and my retired history teacher said, Bill, that's what you should have done. I said, I guess I did it in a different way. I picked up a tradition of music and carried it on to a generation who didn't know anything about it, and they'd say, well, what did you learn? And I said, hey, go out on the record store. Pick up an album by Muddy Waters. Pick up one by Albert King.
Get back to me after you have.
Exactly. Listen, and I'll tell you, guys, that were really, Stevie Ray Vaughan was a master. There's some stuff on the Internet with him and Albert playing together, and it's Albert King, and it's just great. I mean, because that's... Where were you down in Texas?
I was Waco, mostly.
There's another city where music was real big.
Austin?
Yeah, because I think that's where the Fabulous Thunderbirds came out of. And that was... the guitar player with the Thunderbirds was a guy named Jimmy Vaughn. He's Stevie's brother, and he's a fine... And a harp player named Kim Wilson, who stopped by the Euclid Tavern one night, and we proceeded to... I got him up to play, and we went down the basement to do our research with Latin American vegetation, you know, on the breaks. We did a lot of that. And,
yeah.
And hell, Bob, I'm second generation. My old man got busted with a pound of reefer in 46. And luckily for him...
You know what? You've mentioned that, and every time you do, I think about... There's a line in Shel Silverstein's great epic spoken word piece called The Great Smoke-Off.
Yeah.
And it's something like, from the teenies who smoke reefer to the ones who've done some time to the old man who smoked reefer back before it was a crime.
Well, that's where I give Barry Goldwater a few points. He was on late night TV, and he being an Arizonian, he just said, you know, that stuff grew up everywhere, and it didn't destroy everybody that touched it. There's so many things. Well, I mean, booze was just as bad. I hate to tell you how many boozers I know. And
well, the Prohibition movement was born, Bill, out of the intense agony of women having to deal with drunken husbands.
Oh, sure. My grandfather on my dad's side and my mother's side, both of them, we used to go to lunch at a local bar, and there was the free lunch was on the counter as long as you bought enough alcohol to go with it. I mean, there's piles and piles of bread and lunch meat and all the old free lunch. In fact, there's the term no free lunch that you hear occasionally still.
Yeah.
That's where it came from.
Right, because you were buying drinks. It wasn't free.
No, it wasn't really free. Anyway, good luck. Hang in there.
All right. Thank you, Bill. Take care. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's John. How you doing?
Hey, John. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. Well, I'll tell you, I've been grading tonight, so I'm a little cranky about the whole education thing.
seen a few comma splices, maybe a couple of sentence fragments.
You know, we're to the point where I just told them, you know, I'm not even going to look at the grammar. Don't even worry about it. You know, give me what the question asks, which is a shame.
So assuming that you can work out cuneiform, ancient Aramaic, or linear A, just answer the damn question.
If I can read it, yeah, you know, give me something. And really, it got me thinking, and it was tonight, and it was something you said I'll come back to, but also was really thinking about something that Dr. Bill presented last week. I think it was Monday or Tuesday. He was talking about education and returning the first exams, and it really spoke to me, and you said something along the lines of... nothing that happens in education happens by accident. Just now, talking to Mr. Stress, and could you elaborate on that? Because I'm curious what you meant by that, and I think I might have some things to say.
Well, my only point, John, is that the degradation of public education has been a stated policy goal of the right wing in excess of a generation, and frankly, they have won. With the PRISM program that Dr. Bill headed for a while, that was started by Senator Byrd, because whatever issues one might have with Senator Byrd's conservative tendencies, this was a man who was a bit of an autodidact. He had busted his ass for his education. He took it very seriously, and he was aggrieved by the absence of substantive teaching in the social sciences, history and the Constitution being at the top of his list.
Yeah.
So the PRISM program was an effort to teach teachers how to get back to teaching that. Of course, they were also at the same time up against the wall of standardized testing. Nothing that happens in education has happened by accident is, I think, borne out by No Child's Behind left. Remember when George W. Bush was hailed as a great compromiser because he sat down with Teddy Kennedy and hammered out No Child Left Behind?
Yeah.
And in fact, it was, and how Senator Kennedy didn't see it, I don't know. But it was all just a thinly veiled attempt to create a means by which one could declare public education to be a failure.
Yeah.
And the test scores, the complaints that people have about grammar or spelling, and I'm a spelling nerd, I know it. All of these things have degraded over the course of a generation or two because of the right wing's desire to not see any kind of institutional control over what gets taught. And frankly, a lot of that's borne out, John, and I was actually going to mention this to Dr. Bill when we were talking about, you know, the first things the people would do in crafting the new Constitution. Just as quickly as they got done with the Pledge of Allegiance and the prayer, the first thing a constitutional convention would do would be to pass a statement that whatever document came out of it, we would, by God, put prayer back in schools.
Yeah.
So, I mean, does that give you an idea of what I mean?
Yeah, I think it does, and I think the focus of what Bill was talking about and what I really see is this emphasis on rote and on fact. Fact is what is presented to you as truth, you know, accept it, do not question, the end of story. And it seems like with the focus on standardized testing that the focus in schools is to just dump facts into kids and expect them to kick it back out. And if you do it correctly, then you have achieved something and you have learned something and then you get good grades in your standardized testing. And I know Betsy's talked about this too, but the point of education isn't simply memorization. I feel like there's a difference there. There's a difference between fact and interpretation, and this is where Bill was going. And I see it myself. They're great at reciting facts. At least my experience, college kids today. You present a fact, you put someone on a PowerPoint, they write it down by rote. It's great. When they're done copying the PowerPoint, they sit back and put down the pens. And meanwhile, you are talking, you are giving context, and you are elaborating. You're saying, and the important thing about these facts is because it allows us to think about this and this and this in this way, and that's important because X, Y, Z. None of that gets copied. None of that gets retained. And when it comes to testing time, when you ask them for something other than simply regurgitating a fact, it's carnage. It's absolute chaos. There is no ability to put a fact within a context, to take what a fact implies and say something more interesting about it.
And that's
my frustration.
I understand that, and I think you are wholly correct, because there's something that's been lost along the way, and I mentioned it to Dr. Bill on a number of occasions, and I think I've said it on the air. We yearn for people who have the intellectual skills to be like the framers or the founders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet we utterly neglect how they were taught, and they were still, you know, they were taught the classics, and they were taught science as it was understood during that time, especially if you're talking about the Enlightenment period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they were taught by teachers who were past masters in their own right of the execution of the Socratic method. You know, to teach by questioning, and I'm sure that, I mean, having lived through 3 years of the Socratic method, the first thing I realized looking back was that the Socratic method requires a Socrates in order to execute it.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people who are not cut out for the Socratic method.
Right.
But there is a place, and I think this is where, I think maybe this is where the dropout occurs, and tell me if I'm wrong. There are certain skills you have to have, and I say this based upon practical, real-world experience of observing my own children. My educational experience has been very different from theirs. There was, in my very early formative years, a great deal of rote learning.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are certain, you know, you have to teach a person how to use a hammer.
Yeah.
And if they're banging on the nail with the handle end, you have to work to teach them which end is the business end of the hammer.
Right.
And so, you know, there are certain commonly accepted or commonly understood things that you have to have if you're going to be able to go any further. You know, you've got to know how to write.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, and you know, because oddly enough, Ferg asked me the other day, Dad, what do you think the first human word ever spoken was? And in that moment, I said, Jesus, what I wouldn't give to have Dr. John here right now. Maybe we'll dial him up. And so I pulled one off the cuff, and I said, well, I think it was probably Mama.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was Lion.
More likely.
Or maybe just run, and we'll elaborate on why after we get to safety.
Yeah, so I'm real focused on survival, absolutely.
But he asked me that, and that was one of those beautiful moments, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But in large part, when I was being taught as a child, John, basic arithmetic principles and basic language principles were non-negotiable.
Yeah.
You know, A, in the English language, A makes a certain number of sounds. And C-A-T is pronounced cat, and it's not C-A-T, it's the word cat.
Mm-hmm.
Those things were drilled into my head to the point that my poor brain still runs numbers. I remember phone numbers from 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And could die, you know, and I'm sure they don't go to the, but I remember who had what number.
Yeah.
And the way it was put to me, and this is because my grandmother and a whole boatload of my aunts were teachers in the public school system who were funneling excess books to my mother to teach me. And she, you know, I mean, I was in the crib when she was showing me C-A-T as cat.
Yeah, yeah.
And so things like basic addition and subtraction were not... And I went on to have teachers in public school who thought that finger counting was right up there with trying to eat with one's elbows.
Hmm.
I mean, it was just not, you know, you didn't let people publicly see you counting on your fingers because they would automatically know you were a moron.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was expressed to me that way. But once we got past those rote things, then the questioning started. And then the effort to try to build on those rote tools expanded. And, you know, it was happening in, I think we got multiplication and long division in third grade.
Mm-hmm.
And by fifth grade, we were actually talking in math class about different numerological bases, you know, base 10 versus base 6. And I thought it was wonderful because it just took me off in all kinds of different directions. I didn't really get ruined on mathematics till I had my first bad algebra teacher. I still hate her. Because I'm jealous. It didn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
But you know, the same thing was happening in reading and the same thing was happening in social sciences, and there was always an attempt to build on previous knowledge, not simply by getting you to regurgitate what you'd learned before and what you were then learning, but as you're describing, to build. And so I guess what I'm saying here is if a way has been lost, I think it has to do with standardized testing. And I think it also has to do with the fact that if you're going to maintain a standardized testing regime, then all you're doing is piling facts on facts.
Right.
Are we divergent points?
No, I think that's exactly it. It's the next level. It's the interpretation level. And my feeling is that what we've got here is a generation of people who know all kinds of facts. You know, they know so many things, but really don't understand much, if anything, because the facts themselves are a means to questions and interpretations and trying to put things together in different ways. So it's one thing to hammer, but you can't build the Sistine Chapel just by hammer and nails. You know, there's something that emerges from it that's greater than just the sum. And my concern, I think, what I thought you were going with the education thing, nothing is unintentional. I tend to distrust conspiracy theories in general. I think that they're inherently conservative, you know, but I can't help but feel that there is an outcome of this larger push towards standardized testing to train up lots and lots of people who basically accept direction, basically accept what they're told, and are discouraged from trying to put the pieces together in a different way. and that really frightens me. And I guess my question was, you think there's something to that? And then maybe the other educators out in the audience might have some insights.
Oh, I think there absolutely is something to that. And I think if Dr. Bill were here, he would say that that element has always been present in American education, and he would probably refer to Thomas Jefferson's notes on education in the state of Virginia, or whatever the title was, when he, that very inspiring piece where he talks about raking the rubbish.
Right. Pick the best boys and discard the others. But it seems like even his goal there, there was an element that, okay, there are some people out there who we can train up and who are going to learn the classics and learn the Enlightenment thinkers, not just so they could know what Descartes was saying, but so they could know what Descartes was saying and compare that to Hobbes and compare it to Locke and try to figure out
yes.
some kind of truth that would emerge from all those things. Whereas if we would test today, it would be, you know, I think, therefore I am, was said by A, Descartes, B, Locke, B, Hobbes, C, Hobbes, you know.
D, Jesus.
That doesn't tell you anything. You're right, in which, in Texas, you if you answer that, you're correct.
Yes.
But yeah, there, even what Jefferson was saying, as troubling as it was, and as kind of creepily one-percent-y as it was, there was a notion that the goal of education isn't really to deal with the rubbish, to deal with the facts, let's get it out there, everybody needs a base of knowledge, but there's going to be something greater that emerges, and those are the folks who are going to be in charge.
I think we have to factor into this then, John, the mistaken notion that technology can be a replacement for this is the John Henry argument. John Henry, the steel driving man versus the steam drill. Okay.
Yeah.
Standardized testing is standardized because it can be computer scored.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't think we have yet. One of the more computery folks in the Horn family commune will probably correct me promptly. I don't think we have yet developed the computer that can score an essay.
Right.
And what you're describing, these go beyond mere process. They go into actually the higher and more more lovely aspects of human cognition.
Mm-hmm.
And in so doing, well, if you've got a corporation who builds computers that score standardized tests or designs standardized tests, Dr. John,
yeah,
you're going to pitch, for the sake of your stockholders, that the way to measure education is to do so in a way that can be tested on a machine that grades dots.
Right.
And so once again, I think we see that, our old friend, our old nemesis capitalism is in this mix as well. Because if it is a lot more, and this ties into the arguments you've made about physical professors in physical classrooms.
Right.
Because it is a lot more expensive to hire a whole bunch of teachers to score essays than it is to just feed the damn thing through the computer, because the computer is a one-time capital outlay and you don't have to pay a pension or health care. You've got an IT staff on call, and it's never going to be asked to answer any hard questions because the answers are all predetermined because it's all designed within a computer-driven universe. And this is not the Luddite section of the program. I hope you understand.
No, it's not. And it goes further than that. It's part of it too is the devaluing of education as a profession, which says that, teachers are replaceable with machines because all they do is dump out facts. Again, with assumption that that's what happens, then it's an easy step to, well, we can do this through computers, no problem. But the other thing too, and maybe this does touch on Jefferson actually, it treats students as if they're interchangeable. And that is a real fallacy. In my very limited experience, again, Betsy, I'm sure could talk to this more directly, there is a range of levels of preparation and ability, not to mention language skills, not even to mention disability issues that come up in any classroom, and a professor, a teacher, an elementary or whatever teacher who's there is able to be flexible and adjust to present information in ways that touch all students. That's the craft part of this profession. And you can't do that with a single machine that presents facts or that grades tests and do justice to the different levels of ability in a classroom. It's simply not possible. As far, I mean, I hope it's not, because then, you know, we're all out of work, but you can't, so it's a real attack and a devaluing of education as labor, and also of the idea that students who don't have the right prep can also achieve if encouraged the right way. And that's frightening.
You know, it is frightening. And let me throw one more thing out there for consideration, because I think this says something. I don't have experience with a medical license exam or the accounting license exam or some of the others that are out there, but I can tell you that when you sit for the bar,
yeah,
there is a standardized test called the multi-state,
mm-hmm,
that is 2 days long,
mm,
and it's hell on earth,
mm,
but it is still a standardized test with predetermined right and wrong answers. And every state has a separate threshold score at which you are deemed to pass.
Okay.
However, in many states, and this is one of them, there is a second segment of essays.
Uh-huh.
And this is also brutal. It is by far, I think, based upon what I remember, considered to be more brutal than the standardized portion. And in the standardized portion, I think you get something like 30 seconds per question.
Oh, God.
It's merciless. But then the essay section, you have, you know, maybe 45 minutes to choose between a universe of three questions, and then you go on to another universe of three questions where you have to pick one. But I find it interesting, based upon the issues you've raised here, that in fact, there, you know, the Law Licensing Board still has people who are paid, and presumably are experts in the practice, who are paid to read those essays.
Mm-hmm.
But even in that process, they try to weed out the number of essays they have to read by saying, well, okay, you got a 48. If you'd gotten a 47, we would have read your essays, but you got a 48, so you just get to be a lawyer now.
Right.
And everybody lives in, all lawyers taking the bar live in dread of having to have their essays graded. Because even though law school is probably, you know, I've made the argument on air that law school is actually the logical extension of the ultimate liberal arts degree. Because
right,
the law being the law, there's nothing it does not touch.
Mm-hmm.
And even if lawyers specialize, eventually, at some point in time, they have to be enough of a generalist that they can grab hold of something, climb a learning curve really quick, and then express it to a judge who knows even less. You know, there's an old gag among lawyers. What do you call an IQ? What do you call a lawyer with an IQ of 30? Your Honor.
Right.
But I find it fascinating that, and I think there are essays in other professional exams. We want those essays in case there's a close call as to whether or not someone should be admitted to practice, craft, priesthood. You know, I was taught late in my law school career to understand lawyering as a secular priesthood.
Yeah.
And that everything we had been through was basically priesthood hazing. I think there's some truth in there to be found somewhere, in that if the profession involves something where we know that at some point in time somebody's going to have to use some critical reasoning skills, then by God, we're actually going to bite the bullet and spend the money on somebody to read the essays and make sure that they can string a sentence together.
Yeah.
But in places where we don't want people asking questions, we're going to spoon feed them facts and expect the facts to be regurgitated, and in fact we're going to discourage deviation from fact, so that you know if you've, you know, if you, it, because we don't want you out. I mean, I think this accounts, for instance, in the decline of the classics. Because, again, there you are opening that door to all of those critics. I had, in Latin 4 in college, I had to translate Cicero, and I spent an entire semester taking time out from my studies to see if I couldn't maybe design that time machine that would let me go back in time and murder Cicero in his crib. not just because it was incredibly hard to read, but because even back then he was expressing ideas that were so thoroughly propagandized that, I mean, it was advocacy, and it was winner versus loser. That's the way that whole culture was set up governmentally. And even back then, I was, you know, little beer drinking college student. I was pretty sure that everything did not narrow down to winner versus loser.
Yeah.
And yet here we are. We've perpetuated a system that's winner versus loser, but we've refined it to the point, Dr. John, that we want to predetermine what it is to win and make sure that everybody memorizes that.
Yeah, and
I hope I don't sound like I'm on acid or something.
No, you don't. And it seems so invisible too, because it's just what happens when you go to school, and it's just standardized testing, and we don't even question it, because of course it's good to, you know, test students. We have to do that, but the way we're testing, and it's not because teachers necessarily want to do this. It's because, again, they're compelled to. The way we're doing it is training up these students to be passive and to be accepting and to not just have difficulty rearranging the pieces of an argument, but to be hostile to the idea. And, you know, we need to be training students the way we're training lawyers, because lawyering, you know, is important, but most people aren't lawyers. And the people who are going to be running the country are just
but lawyers are running the country, and we don't want people questioning the lawyers, John.
Well, we don't. I even see, you know, echoes of this in those tweets you read. Of course, these people who are, I gather, because they're Twitter users and their language, I gather, are in their 20s, maybe still in college. Of course they say that it's Obama's fault that, you know, the shutdown happened, because that's what they're told. And we can't question that, because it's a fact. And,
well, you know, I'm
18 years learning that facts are irrefutable, and there's no point in playing with them, because they're,
you know, Dr. Bill touched on this some a little bit. I forget what his point of his jumping off point was, but the question of trying to teach the art of argument to children, they have been taught by a generation of Crossfire and Sean Hannity screaming at people, and they've eschewed it because they don't like it. It's confrontational. It's hateful. And so they've equated that with the word argument. And if you try to teach it, the Dr. Bill's point, I think, was that they resist learning how to craft an argument because they don't want to be like those things that they hate.
Yeah.
Whereas argument is not that. Like I said, talking with Dr. Bill, you know, these are the discussions that take place with a little bit of sherry on the table and a wedge of brie.
Right.
Because, you know, it's cool. And you don't have to come to blows or scream, Jane, you ignorant slut, at anybody. By the way, Granny T in Tennessee chiming in. She says, "Relearning." Granny T's from West Tennessee. Bob and John, follow the money. Testing is a very profitable business, and charter schools are very profitable businesses. And see, there's lots of tax dollars that go into supporting public school districts, and Christianity has nothing to do with the fact that the right wing wants to dismantle the public education system. They want to dismantle the public education system because it brings in a lot of tax dollars, which they're not going to stop collecting. They're just going to give it to people who will then, well, who are the right people to have money. It's the same principle behind getting rid of pensions and turning them into 401ks, or wanting to get rid of Social Security and giving it to their buddies on Wall Street. Everything has been commodified.
Yeah, absolutely. And religious charter schools, I mean, religion, the ultimate source of revealed truth, unquestionable. Yeah, she's right. Love hearing from Granny T, and she's bringing some real truth there. So I kind of had to vent, and I appreciate the chance. So thanks for your...
Well, this didn't feel like a vent, John.
For me.
No, this feels like the kind of stuff that we live for around here.
Yeah.
I mean, and I was just going to throw out there a minute ago. Remember last week I mentioned the fact that on October 1st, my son was in a class as a high school senior that devolved into a little Klan rally with the teacher herself using the N-word next to the word Obama.
Wait, I missed this. What the hell are you talking about? I'm sorry, is this in an older program?
No, this is last week.
What?
The day the shutdown happened.
Have you already mentioned this? I this is news to me.
Yeah,
I want you to elaborate, but if you've already done it, I'll just catch the...
Well, no, I mean, that's basically all there was to it. You know, he came home and said, Dad, you know, I was in class today, and he told me the teacher, and he told me the class, and he said, all the kids in my class were screaming about that N-word Obama, and my teacher did, too.
Are you kidding me?
And then we had one
no,
of those...
You're not kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you.
No, of course.
I have no reason to kid.
Mm-mm.
And there is absolutely not a damn... And, you know, from activist Bob, this is really going to suck to hear. There's not a damn thing I can do about it.
My God.
There's no data. There's no recording. Had he been caught recording, he would have been thrown out of school summarily.
Yeah. We can't play around with kids like this.
And by the way...
I guess my point, yeah.
And by the way, when he did speak up... And he said, everything you people are saying about Obamacare is wrong. The teacher said, don't you have work to do? Be quiet.
Wow. I trust you gave that boy a giant hug or maybe made his favorite dinner or something.
Yeah, I did.
Over him. That takes some guts, man.
I did. And because, you know, I was ready, you know, I had the fife and drum corps ready outside the studio door and was ready to march. He said,
yeah.
And he's like, Dad, please don't do this to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the way it was framed. Don't do this to me.
To me, right. It's a confrontation. We can't fool around with kids like this, you know, the implications of that. Again, they're trained to listen to whatever the person in front of the class says, you know, and not touch it. And boy, when they speak to your own prejudices, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
My God.
I mean, that's affirmation on a visceral level, John.
Yeah. Get it from a different authority figure, and boy, the right loves that. Wow.
But, you know, if nothing else, I hope his mother and I and other people who care about him, and there are a lot of them, this family commune being one of them,
sure,
have done all that they can to make sure that that kind of stuff is countered.
Yeah.
And to explain that there is a better way and that that is wrong. So, you know, and that's the thing with child rearing, all you can do is hope.
Yeah, well,
I mean, there's work, but at the end of the day, you just gotta hope. You gotta hope for what sticks and what doesn't.
Sure, just to stand up is huge. So that's wonderful to hear, and also shocking to hear. My God. Well, anyway, I'm gonna get out of your way here, Bob. But thanks for letting me chat, and it's good to talk to you.
Oh, John, thank you. It was a wonderful conversation, and thank you also for taking it on yourself to do the podcast awards thing. The post is up there at headonradionetwork.com, and now all folks have to do is go vote. You know, just follow the very clear instructions. I have to compliment you again. The very clear instructions you gave. Follow that. Use hashtag PCA13. Share it among your friends. And maybe we can, because this is not about me wanting to go to Vegas and play the slots with Dr. Bill. This is about trying to bring more people into the conversation. And, you know, I've joked all along that if the phone lines stay busy long enough, I'll move the show to 6 hours.
There you go. I'd love to see that. All right, so we'll see if we can make that happen.
All right. Thank you, Dr. John.
Yeah, take care.
You too. Bye now. Dr. John, nobody quite like him. Let's keep things going. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
Hey, Jim, what's happening? Let me ask you first, was everything pretty okay as the tropical storm came ashore?
Oh, dude, it turned out to be
took a couple of days, but nothing poured in through our ceiling last night, and yeah. came with some 35-mile-an-hour winds. So
it was kind of weird because there was hardly any rain, and sometimes you at least get a little rain. There was a pathetic amount of precipitation, but hardly anything. Yeah, it's just like. No, it seemed like just a reason to buy, you know, to go to the corporation and prepare and buy batteries and water and whatnot, and then nothing happens. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a clue if you're watching the Weather Channel and they say, this tropical storm update brought to you by EverReady. Well, there you go.
Oh, and by the way, the Government Weather Association is part-time now because of the fight between the president and the Republicans, basically. Yeah, well, that's fun stuff. And,
yeah, the sad thing is, I don't know how much of it's a fight on the part of the president. I mean, this is the wrong show to turn to for the unbridled, uncompromising, all-the-time defense of Barack Obama, but... when the man says I'm ready to enter, you know, I'm ready to give away your granny's Social Security if you'll just open the government back up, whew, mother.
I agree 100%. And being in the situation you and I discussed a while back, I'm not happy with that at all. And even if I weren't in that situation, I think that's travesty what they're trying to do to the Social Security system. Because all you got to do is just take off the limit, you know.
Well, you know, Jack, there, you're
making $10 million, $100 million a year. Why not contribute a little bit more to Social Security? Do you need that extra money that bad? I just look at it.
Do you know what it's like to have to go through lunch without a lobster every day?
Well, it's just lobster with a couple less grits of butter on it.
No, I was going to say, your fellow Louisianan Jack wrote in from Shreveport a little bit ago and pointed out, was it Jack? Let me make sure. There was a hit piece. Yeah, it was Jack. I don't know if you caught it or not, but last night on 60 Minutes, they gave an entire segment's worth of time to Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, Jim, who declared that the system is being gamed and that the Social Security Disability Program is rife with fraud perpetrated by people who aren't nearly as disabled as they appear to be. And at one point, and I actually caught a clip of this and went furniture kicking, this is Tom Coburn from Oklahoma, okay? This is a guy who, when he was running for Senate, declared that he needed to be a senator because there was an outbreak of lesbianism in the seventh grade in Oklahoma junior high schools. Not kidding. And so he declared that in order to get disability, you have to prove that you are incapable of doing a job anywhere in the national workforce. And of course, with pompous dignity, he then declared, and that's just impossible in America. So guess what? If Tom Coburn's doing this, the next big thing, since CBS catapulted the propaganda for him, the next big thing is going to be that everyone on any form of disability in this country is some big old honking slacker who's causing the debt and the deficit to rise.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not only that. I see that on a lot of different levels. I mean, you're talking about 60 Minutes, and I gave up on them decades. 30, 40, 50, well, not 50, I'm barely a little bit over 50. From my upbringing, that's just all corporate spin. I mean, they'll have a little liberal stuff here and there, and they'll have even some liberal stuff, but it's still corporate sponsored, you know? It's, that's one of the great things about your show. I mean, I haven't heard a commercial yet advertising an EverReady battery or how great the oil cleanup's going.
Nor do I suspect you ever will, Jim.
You know, so I trust words. I uttered from your mouth and a couple other people's a lot more than corporate media. I mean, and even the quote-unquote liberal MSNBC, I can watch a little bit of it, but not a lot. I mean, except for when, what's her name's on? She's so cute, but that's just me, you know.
Yeah, but anything you like, I mean, this is the where I am with MSNBC. Even if I like something, too much of it's going to make me feel nauseous.
Yeah, yeah.
And having that goofball gas bag Joe Scar, yeah, this is the liberal network, and its broadcast day starts with Joe Scarborough.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
I caught him the other day, a couple of days ago, at the beginning of the morning. I was up, and there's him, and he was doing his little spin machine thing, and. It's weird. He kind of mixes it with kind of some semi-coherent points a little bit. I forgot what it was because, I mean, I tell you the truth, I don't even watch it that much because I just know it's BS as far as I'm concerned. You know, and then like I've had people, air quotes for that, but people tell me, oh man, you go listen to both sides. No, you don't.
No, you know, our buddy Horst did such a good job with that on Facebook the other day. If one guy says, I want to stab you and your wife to death, and the other guy says, I don't want to be stabbed, you don't have to listen to both sides of that argument to know that one side is a homicidal maniac and the other side is rational.
Exactly.
But the thing that Horst pointed out was that we do, in fact, have these third-way middle-of-the-road, milquetoast-sopping assholes who say, no, now we have to listen to both sides. And, you know, both sides do it. I mean, you're sitting here hollering you don't want to be stabbed, and he's hollering he wants to stab you. We've got to come to some kind of a compromise here.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then, like, it's just like this thing with the shutdown of the government and stuff, and in fact, I've got an appointment with a government agency, but it's still open in a relatively short while, and that's still going through. But which I was pleased to hear, and I complimented the individual I was talking on the phone. And I really appreciate you guys. You know, and I don't know, you know, what the whole deal is. I'm sure my inspirational, I appreciate it, went light years, but I'm being a little bit sarcastic. Watch out, I slip into sarcasm once in a while.
Yeah, it happens to me, too. But, somebody usually throws me a rope.
Yeah. But, you know, I'll see what happens when it happens. And, but it's just... At the beginning of the show, when you were playing those, just those idiotic, were those all Southern or just all over?
I have no way of knowing what the geography was. They were mostly young, you know, probably late teens to late 20s, I'd guess.
God, it made me want to vomit, dude. I didn't. You know, it's just like, can't you get? I mean. Yeah, I feel like Socrates or somebody, you know, trying to tell him, I mean, you're just being played. It, you know, unless you're born into the 1%.
No, because, see, they're all going to be part of the 1% someday, Jim. So they've got to protect they got to protect them because what they're really doing is protecting themselves.
Well, see, Bob, I'm going to be part of the 1%. In fact, I might be because I bought a lottery ticket, and... I might have
won. Oh, man, you need to get out there and argue for tax breaks now.
No, dude, I don't mind paying taxes if I win the lottery. I don't mind paying taxes.
Well, see, then you don't understand freedom and liberty, Jim.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. That little tape segment you play, or that voice thing you do with the Wolverine's cry.
Yeah.
That's from...
Red Dawn.
Yeah, that movie that I remember seeing it come out about 6-8 months ago.
When that was the remake.
Yeah, the ad for it. And it's just like how right-wing.
You need to see the version that was done during the reign of Reagan. Patrick Swayze and I forget who else. And
Patrick Swayze?
Yeah, really.
Oh, man. I never liked him anyway.
You'll like him.
Dirty Dancing. Didn't he do Dirty Dancing?
Yeah, yeah. His best work was in To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Yeah. And didn't the Sky Spook take him away or something like that?
The Sky Spook gave him pancreatic cancer. The Sky Spook giveth, and then the Sky Spook taketh you away.
Well, you think the Sky Spook would have thought twice, being it's... no question the Sky Spook, so... But, Red Dawn. He was... that's so crazy. Red Dawn. I can't believe...
Yeah, the difference that was, when they did the remake... After they focus grouped it, it was originally done, and the Chinese were the people who were in, was the country that was invading the United States. But then somebody whispered in somebody's ear in Hollywood and said, "Hey, dumbass, do you know how many Chinese people there are? Do you know how many movie tickets they buy if they let us show the movie in China?" So they had to go back and do a recut, and they made the bad guys the North Koreans. This would have all been so much simpler if they had just remade it from the original version, because in the original version, it was predicated upon on a Cuban invasion that Ronald Reagan had actually publicly fantasized about, and the Cubans invaded the United States.
Man, this country is so...
effed.
Whacked out. Yeah, effed. It is so... and it has so much. I almost want to refer to it in past tense. But it's sad, dude. I mean, I feel like Nero fiddling in Rome, but I'm not. Yeah, but I have a clue as to what's going on and why. I mean, and I'm not responsible as Nero. Kind of was.
Yeah. Well, no, you're not. There's a monumental difference between that, you and that metaphor, Jim. Because, for starters, Nero turned into a homicidal maniac. But he was actually not at the time. He was not criticized for what he did in the aftermath of the Great Fire of Rome. He organized fire brigades. He rebuilt the city. All of that stuff. But the idea of dithering in the midst of crisis, you're not dithering. You're plugged into what's going on. You know what is happening. So there's that. At any rate, I got to get out of here because we're up against it, and hopefully we will talk soon.
Oh, for sure. Probably next week. Enjoyed it. Great show once again, Bob.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana. A couple of notes in before we wrap up. Robert, writing from up in Australia. Red Dawn remake stars Australians. Hey, Bob, just a trivia point. The remake of Red Dawn starred two Australian ex-soap opera actors. He closes with, "Wolverines!" I don't even know if I could do that with an Aussie accent. Juanita writes from Ohio regarding Tom Coburn. Bob, Tom Coburn received a deferment from military service because of alleged mental problems. Let him bring this argument on. Well, but see Juanita, he overcame. Red Dawn, cast from Ron and Raleigh. C. Thomas Howell, Powers Booth, Ron O'Neill. Patrick Swayze was in there, wasn't he, Ron? Jack writing in, my Saturday newspaper had a letter to the editor that blamed problems in America on all the clowns in Washington. Then she split people up into several groups and applied words like fools, lawyers, homesteaders. Then she brought up World War II and the military. Then she said the only one succeeding in Washington on his mission is, quote, that 4F in the White House. And the editor notes at the end of that part, at the end of the letter, that part of being a 4F status is one couldn't read, write, or sometimes prove citizenship. A damn birther, even now. And you might find it interesting to note that I believe it was Peter King of New York who says that one of the fundamental problems with the Republican caucus is that there are still a whole bunch of people who are in his party who are trying to delegitimize the presidency because they don't believe that Barack Obama was legitimately elected president. You know, 6 years later. Well, 5.5. And thus, here endeth the lesson. The morans, ye have always with ye. It's time to rock on out of here. I want to thank Ed, and I want to thank Jay. Jay, who was so much help a week ago, stepped up again. And between them, Jay and Ed and Kevin, we raised $55 of what we try to raise, $150 on any given evening. So thank you very much for that. It was a drop of rain on parched earth, and we are all very thankful. Thank you very much. We will begin tomorrow, and remember, no Dr. Bill tomorrow. We'll begin tomorrow in a hole, but kind of like the echo in here, I guess. It gets to be a little homey after a while, doesn't it? We'll find a way. Y'all always do. So thank you all for all you do, your ideas, your comments, your phone calls, your emails, your tweets, your Facebook postings. Thank you for your continued financial support of this effort. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net and ACHECT.org, ACHEACT.ORG. And always, always, always. Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.